I think this is the biggest crowd we've had this session, and on the last day when I have how many bills on the schedule? So it is the House Transportation Committee on April 30th is now come to order. I had intended to try to work through some of the work sessions before I got to the the public hearings. But I do have a legislator in the building, so I am going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3018 and ask Senator Rick Metzger to come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26. I know you have a very packed agenda, as we all do, on this 30th day of April. So I will be brief. I have submitted a Dash 6 amendment to House Bill 3018, which you can look over, and as your day progresses, would ask that this be incorporated into House Bill 3018 as you, in all likelihood, refer the bill on to the Revenue Committee for further consideration. House Bill 3018 increases the vehicle plate registration, which was encompassed in the bill that you sent over to the Senate in House Bill 2269, but it increases that at a greater level and follows a Connect Oregon type of allocation in which to generate revenues up to $200 million for immediate transportation congestion relief across the state on areas that have been identified by the Oregon Department of Transportation through the various regions. The reason this is an amendment to 3018 is that it has to have a weight mile adjustment in it, which I was unable to accomplish in 2269. But I do believe it begins us on the path of some immediate congestion relief as we continue to work at providing additional transportation dollars over the next 24 months to make a significant increase in transportation and congestion relief on our system throughout the state of Oregon. So I just commend those amendments to you and look forward to continue to working with the committee and others on this transportation issue as we move through the final 2 months of session.
Thank you. Any questions for the senator? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3018, and we will get back to it. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2033. Judith.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2033 revises the definition of minimum county road base funding. You have before you the Dash 1 amendments. Those amendments increase the funding available to counties to address the county road base funding deficits as follows. It increases the withdrawal from the state highway fund from $250,000 to $750,000 to be deposited in a separate ODOT account allocated to counties for maintenance, repair, and improvement of existing roads. It increases the allocation from $1 million to $1.5 million. From a separate account distributed among all counties that had a county road base funding deficit in the prior fiscal year. It provides that a county share shall be based on the ratio of the amount of the county's road deficit to the total account balance of the $1.5 million. And it repeals a section that talks about the previous methodology. This does have referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. And I'm going to go ahead and invite Matt Garrett.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Matthew Garrett, the Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. It's a privilege for me to be here. I thank you for your time. I didn't have the opportunity to share with you some of my thoughts when the Dash 1 amendments played themselves out in front of the panel. I kind of rode circuit and shared some thoughts individually. I just want you to know where we as an agency and our partners with the county have been in this discussion. This is not a foreign discussion. There is no question that the needs for those vulnerable counties at the end of the financial ladder, that's not lost on us. The gravity of that situation is not lost on us. But in light of the fact that secure rural schools exponentially grows the risk, that's the tone of the conversation I've had with my county partners, saying, why don't we see if we can address those issues that are made worse by the tenuous situation of the secure county school situation. As a matter of fact, right now, if you look at the special county allotment, four counties are run below that minimum county allotment of $4,500 per county road mile. Of those four, again, looking at that bigger picture of secure rural schools, two of them aren't impacted. A little bit odd, I think, because, again, I want to focus on what I think is the core issue here. And how do we address that? And it would be my thought that rather than mandating something, we engage, and I think there are four opportunities now that present themselves for the counties to come forward, engage a conversation with my transportation commission. Again, in light of this exposure at the federal level and the tenuous nature of the remedy being sought there, come to my commission and let us look at the various financial mechanisms that we have in place, be it the infrastructure bank, be it the immediate opportunity funds, those loans and grants, to somehow make sure that we're not addressing the exposure of just four counties, but the 11 counties that now become exposed due to secure county schools. Let us grow this conversation and truly help those that are most exposed in this conversation. The second opportunity to engage in a discussion, and I think you're going to hear some of it today, let's grow the pot. How can we come together and grow the pot, because the needs specific to the transportation infrastructure far outstrip the revenues that we do have. So let us aggressively engage, and the county partners have been there. I would note, if you look at the business proposal I've heard about and the revenues generated there, the revenues flowing back to the counties is just about the equivalent of the gap, the transportation gap, that comes with the doing away with secure county roads. I think finally, the third area we have in our budget discussions, the co-chairs have pulled $50 million out of our budget to, again, address the exposure from the federal legislation. Those rules of engagement need to be engaged. So I think there's a more robust discussion on what I truly think is the core issue. And in dealing with that core issue, we will take care of the remedy that I think is being sought by 2033 and the Dash Ones. But I think we better place our focus on there. So, Madam Chair, I'll conclude there just saying that's the tone of the discussion I've had with the counties. I think there are opportunities to continue this discussion, and I can assure you, not knowing what the remedy will be at the federal level, we're going to have to get across the table from each other and figure out how we look at allocations, making sure whatever monies do come, and if indeed some come from the federal government, that's going to change from where we are today. And if indeed monies come from the ODOT budget to help plug that gap, how we engage the folks in making sure that everyone is putting a hand out and a hand in to address this type of issue. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, do you see the $1.5 million under 2033 as being a portion of the $50 million as recommended by the co-chairs or in addition thereto?
I think it's a portion. Again, if secure rural schools goes away, that 1.5, it's actually, it becomes a 1.7 deficit. 1.5 goes into to backfill some of those numbers. But if secure rural schools goes away, that liability grows to about $5.5 million. Again, that's where I want to address with all the financial apparatus that we have in it as an agency and on some of the discussions that are now taking place within this body.
A follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair. Matt, my recollection is the last session or maybe two sessions ago, the counties felt like they'd come to a good conclusion that ODOT would put money aside for some of these rural counties that were deficient as a result of the lack of production and the natural resources and the timber, and that that money was to come back to be used in those rural counties and was in fact used in those rural counties, but was used by ODOT as opposed to provided to the road departments. So can you Can you give us any flavor of where that might be?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not privy to that conversation. I know the counties did step up. They put a little more skin in the game. ODOT maintained its commitment of $250,000 to bring that level up to $1 million. We certainly, obviously, are not going to back away, even at a time of great need for all the transportation partners here. We maintain that. But I apologize, Representative. I can't speak to the past there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you so much.
I just have a comment, and I guess I want to make it clear when this came to us, it came to us before the real discussions on the timber fund dollars. So this really, in my mind, wasn't connected with that. It was just those small rural counties that, even though they weren't timber affected, are struggling, and I think that that's what we were dealing with when we started talking about this. So, thank you.
I understand. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendments dated 3/12/07 to 2033.
Thank you. Representative Gilman moves the -1 amendments dated 3/12/07. To House Bill 2033. Any discussion?
If nobody else, did you want to?
Well, I was hearing you first. On the amendments or on the bill?
Anything.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, we heard testimony on the 26th of March, and it was very compelling testimony. And a couple of days after that, we heard testimony from the Transportation Commission regarding the high cost of congestion. And when I had mentioned to some of the county commissioners who were here speaking about an option that was being looked at in my city regarding raising the gas tax, they had said that they feared that they would be recalled, and I can understand that, and maybe that would happen in my county too, I don't know. But I'm not opposed to this, but it does concern me that in areas where people are reluctant to tax themselves to pay for their roads, that Big Mama and Big Papa are coming down to provide money for them. If they're not willing to tax themselves, where do they think the money comes from? So I think there is certainly a need here, and I will probably vote for it, but I'm just a little concerned that people think that money comes from the sky and they don't need to tax themselves to pay for their roads, but somehow we're going to provide the money for them, and it's just a tough place to be.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tomei, for your support. I think probably one of the concerns that those three commissioners, Jeannie Birch, judge up in Wheeler County, and Steve Grasty and Dan Joyce brought us from those rural eastern Oregon counties, was in fact that they don't have alternative transportation like we may have in the more metropolitan areas of the state. They don't have a bus that stops at every 10th or 15th street corner, let alone a bus that stops every day to assist those folks to make sure that they can get to a doctor's appointment or to pick up groceries and those kinds of things. So it is a different situation in the rural counties. Their alternative transportation, as Senator Ferrioli once said, is that their alternative forms of transportation are, as if the white pickup don't start, then maybe the red one will, and they can use it to go to town. So it's a different environment, and they don't 100% of everything they do, they must commute to get there. So that's, I think it's just a different mindset.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tomei, I appreciate those comments. And actually, I strongly agree with them. thank you. The one thing we need to keep in mind when we're talking about the smallest counties is we're not talking the smallest county by geography or geographical size, but by population. And so for Wheeler County to step up and to tax itself, it's a county of 1,450 folks. that's landlocked, that's largest community is roughly 550 people. And while they're aggressively trying to become open to the state of Oregon and develop their tourism, the fact is the people who buy fuel in Fossil are the citizens in Fossil. And so for them to try and pass anything other than probably a $10,000 bond levy, they would not have the population base to spread the expense over. And so I guess we as a state have to decide, do we want to have our entire state of Oregon connected, or do we want to have pockets that are disconnected? And so I have to agree with you, Representative Tomei. Folks ought to be stepping up at the local level. I agree with you strongly on that.
Thank you. Any objection? Seeing none, the dash one amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move House Bill 2033 as amended with a dash one be moved to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation from the committee.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2030 to the floor as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? I guess here I'll take my chance, and that is that I think there have been a number of proposals to help the counties this session, and I think that this one just needs to go down to Ways and Means and join the rest of the discussion and see what happens. So with that, those of the opinion that House Bill 2033 as amended should be reported to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on 2033 and open a work session on House Bill 2872.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2872, you have before you the dash two amendments that replace the original measure. The dash two amendments would prohibit a person under the age of 18 years holding a provisional driver's license, a special student driver permit, or an instruction driver permit from using a mobile communication device while operating a motor vehicle on a highway, except in the circumstance to summon medical or other emergency help when no other capable person is in the vehicle to assist. It would create a Class B traffic violation carrying a fine of up to $360. And it specifies that a police officer may enforce this provision only as a secondary action when a driver has been detained for another suspected traffic violation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. Committee, this amendment was one that, after listening to all the discussion in the public hearing that I put in, it probably didn't go as far as Representative McPherson would have liked it to go, but I thought it was a good start, and my intent was not to pick on young drivers because I do think that they have certain advantages that we don't have, but more to instill maybe good driving habits while they're learning and young that maybe they'll carry over as they move into adulthood. So that was my reasoning on this bill, and I'm here to listen to how well my reasoning is accepted. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really want to compliment you on the dash two amendments to House Bill 2872. I think you found a good common sense balance on the issue, and I think this action is going to make the roads much safer. I think it's going to give our youth persons under the age of 18 who are learning to drive an opportunity to learn in an undistracted manner, and I compliment you on this.
Thank you. Any other comments Representative Butler.
I had noted that there were some dash one amendments. Madam Chair, I assume that we are not considering those dash one amendments at this time.
Yes. And if you remember, because I thought this was what they were, but they had to do with the two-way communication devices for occupations, and we didn't think that probably that was a necessary one in this particular bill.
Just a question: if we have a driver under the age of 18 who is using a two-way communication device, not a mobile cell, but a two-way communication device in a summertime employment, is that permitted?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Butler, this measure right would allow two-way communication devices to be used in that circumstance.
For employment. Or by anyone under the age of 18, even though they may have only a provisional student or an instructor driver permit.
Madam Chair, members, I think it would be safest for me to go back to the definition in the amendment of what a mobile communication device is, and so it would only prohibit the use of a device that allows for text messaging or a wireless two-way communication device designed to receive and transmit voice or text communication. My understanding in this, the amendment that had been requested in an employment-related situation, it was exempting situations in which a different type of device, like a CB radio, where you can transmit and receive simultaneously, would be exempted. But no such exemption would apply here. Just the use of a mobile communication device that I had described, as it's stated in the amendment, and it's silent then on the two-way communication device that allows for simultaneous receiving and transmitting.
My only concern is that out in the farm and ranch community, these folks will be communicating back and forth as they are particularly hauling loads in from the fields to the weigh scales or to the delivery sheds, and they will have they may or may not have other communication devices, but they certainly will be using in some instances handheld two-way radios and those kinds of things. So I wouldn't want for agriculture there to be and the forest industry products industry that there would be any damage to those folks in summertime employment. Typically, particularly on the farm, those kids have been driving since they were 6 or 7 years of age, so it's not like the standard student or provisional or instructional driver permit. So that's why I ask.
Thank you.
And I have one other bit of information. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, members. I also wanted to point out that I did consult with Mr. Craig Campbell, who had put in the initial dash one amendments, giving him the new language, and he did not feel that additional amendment was necessary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2872.
Thank you. Representative Smith moves the dash two amendments to dated 42707 to House Bill 2872. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2872 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Smith moves House Bill 2872 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Wow. Seeing none, those of the opinion House Bill 2872 should be reported to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Butler?
Madam Chair, I have some reservations. I'm going to vote no and reserve the right to vote yes on the floor after further examination. No.
Thank you.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
President Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Chair Byer?
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you. And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill, or the work session on House Bill 2872. Does anyone want to carry this, or do they want to leave it? I'll either carry it or see if Representative McPherson would like to carry it. So. Thank you, everybody. And I'm going to go ahead since I saw someone in the audience. Yes. Okay, there he was, back over there. So, which one do I need to do?
3082.
I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3082 and would Representative Hunt like to come forward. I have two of your bills on the schedule. I was just wondering which one I was doing.
For the record, Representative Dave Hunt. And since the other bill is ours jointly, I have complete confidence that you will do whatever you want to with that one and keep it alive. I appreciate the chance to come back and testify on House Bill 3082, which, as you'll recall, allows counties to add a county vehicle registration fee by action of a county board of commissioners. You should have, I believe, Madam Chair, a dash one and a dash two amendment, which are both technical fixes to make sure that in solving this problem, no additional problems are created. And I believe there's some other folks who can speak to the specifics of that bill. It relates to some intergovernmental agreements that are pre-existing, I believe, just in the Portland metropolitan area, to make sure that allowing these counties to have that authority does not cause additional problems. But as you recall, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the core issue here is giving one more tool to local governments. They're getting hammered by backlog maintenance. They're getting hammered by huge modernization needs. And unfortunately, it looks like they're going to get hammered by a reduction in county timber payments. Whether that drops off slowly or quickly is unclear, but that it's clearly coming. This gives them one tool to choose to utilize or not. Could be in an urban county or a rural county. It's not specific, but it gives them the ability, by action of a board of county commissioners, to add a vehicle registration fee to address some of their local transportation needs. Certainly doesn't solve the problem by itself. Certainly doesn't absolve us of responsibility to step up, hopefully this session and in future sessions, with transportation funding from the state directly to local governments, but it does give them one additional tool. I'll stop there. We'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you. Committee. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hunt, I just want to make clear that I understand. This is no requirement on any county to use this tool. It just allows them to increase the registration fees if they so desire.
Yes.
Just for their county.
Yes, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Tomei, that's absolutely right. In fact, it really, the core is removing the sentence in state statute that currently prohibits them from enacting a county vehicle registration fee by the Board of Commissioners. It removes that sentence from statute, thereby allowing them the option, but certainly not the requirement.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you. Representative Hunt, are you familiar with the history of votes by counties relative to these taxes in the past when people have been asked to vote on them? Gas taxes and vehicle registration taxes.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I understand it is a mixed history across the state, yes.
Well, if 100% if 100% failure or nearly 100% failure is a mixed history, the information that was given to us was that Benton County put up $10 2 years ago. It failed. 8 other counties referred gas taxes, and they all failed. I don't know which counties may have passed it, but my concern is that sometimes the perception is that we as elected leaders think that because we feel like it's a good idea that the voters are just going to come along with us, and many times they don't. So that's a concern that I do have.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I think that's a very legitimate concern. Obviously, not only we, but our local officials in our districts very much have a responsibility to be in communication with the public and to sell the public. I think the flip side of it is, I think the public, when they elect us and when they elect local officials, are also giving some responsibility to look at the facts, and especially looking at the facts, maintenance, modernization, county timber payments. I think for some counties anyway, this will give them a tool they don't currently have. It also gives them an opportunity to go and sell it to the public. Obviously, the public still has the right to. Nothing in this change would prohibit anyone from gathering signatures on such an increase and referring that to voters. It just wouldn't require that the county board refer it out to voters in the first place.
I guess, Madam Chair, the comment that I make is that sometimes we get so set in local government that we think that we're reading because the folks, our circle of folks that we discuss these things with, is absolutely with us, and we feel very strongly. I in a local vote locally in an eastern Oregon county recently, the folks felt like that the vote was going to come out 70-30, that the folks were right with them. They offered a tax rebate to city residents, which basically pitted city versus county in that particular regard, to offer some particular incentives, and the vote was in fact 70-30, 70 in opposition, 30 in favor, and totally to the surprise of everyone on the local governing board that had proposed that tax.
And Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I think back to 2003 when we as a legislature adopted a state vehicle registration fee increase. Even in a time period, and we all remember that time period well, where voters were voting aggressively against tax increases, and yet, certainly as I look back at that session, I think I received one constituent complaint about that vote to increase the state vehicle registration fee. So I think there is a lot of anti-tax sentiment out there. There was 4 years ago. There continues to be. I think this creates an opportunity for a set of elected officials, much as we stepped up 4 years ago. It enables them as a local board of commissioners to step up. And they still have to make the case to the public. But if the indication from 4 years ago is an example, I think there are times where the public respects elected officials who step up and make those decisions, and especially when they have the assurance that it's going to be reinvested in something specific that they know where it's going to go.
Representative? No? Okay. Well, I will say that I live in a city that had implemented a gas tax and was not referred at that point, but that might have been early on. I think they're the anti-people's radar is up now, so maybe that might not be as successful, but it has worked well for us, and as a matter of fact, our system is in actually pretty good shape right now. So. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good seeing you, Representative Hunt. Share with me one more time, what's the drawback of allowing folks to decide?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the local Board of Commissioners would still have the option to send it out to the voters. It actually would really put it in the same category, I believe, as local gas taxes are right now. Sometimes they are adopted locally, apparently as the city of Springfield did. Sometimes they are referred out to the voters proactively by a local government. This would really put the vehicle registration fee, which is in a weird, unique category right now, where it has to be referred out every time. It would put it in the category of saying, if there is merit and approval by the Board of Commissioners in that county, they would have the option to enact it. It would still be referable based on signatures. If people chose to go that route, and they would continue to have the option to refer it out. It just really gives them an additional tool in their toolbox.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3082.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Thank you.
That's okay. I move Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3082.
Representative Tomei moves the Dash 1 amendments dated 420. I gave it to you. Sorry. 07 to House Bill 3082. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, that amendment then basically says that notwithstanding the Oregon revised statute or any provision in the county charter, that basically it is preliminary to the fact, and I'm wondering if that isn't the same language in the Dash 2 on the first two lines, so that the Dash 2 encompasses the Dash 1.
We are on the Dash 2, are we not?
Dash 1.
On Dash 1? All right.
Judith.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Butler, Representative Buckley, just for a matter of clarification, that's true. The Dash 1s were included in the Dash 2s, but before us, the motion was on the Dash 1, so it's the Dash 1 motion that's before the committee.
Thank you.
I'm willing to withdraw that, Madam Chair, if it would be appropriate to do just the Dash 2.
BJ, would you like to come forward and give us the difference between these?
I suppose we could do a Dash 1 and a Dash 2 and a conflict.
Yeah. Elements, that'd be fine.
They say the same thing.
They do.
Would you like to clarify for us?
I certainly would.
What we're doing?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm BJ Smith. I'm the Public and Government Relations Director for Clackamas County. In fact, you are absolutely correct. The Dash 1 amendments contain the same language as the Dash 2 amendments with respect to making certain that the Oregon statutes work together. The Dash 2 amendments had a secondary purpose that had to do with kind of disentangling some of the intergovernmental statutes up in the Portland metropolitan area. Those amendments that are before you, we just received this morning. There is one section that really needs to be, I won't say negotiated, but I want to make certain that the other metropolitan area governments have a chance to look at those amendments. There is actively a discussion going on about that intergovernmental agreement matrix in the House Revenue Committee, and it would be my preference that we continue that discussion there. That way you can take the Dash 2 amendments off the table for this committee this morning.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really want to make sure I understand this bill. On line 4-7A, at least 90 days before the governing body of a county that overlaps a district can impose a registration fee under the section, the governing body of the county must give notice of the proposed fee to the body. So that is that's a public notice?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that is a public notice, but it's a public notice for the purposes of bringing together the overlapping transportation districts, the cities, and the neighboring counties in the metropolitan area. It isn't a public notice insofar as an action that will be taken legislatively by a county commission on the local registration fee. That's going to be elsewhere in law. This is simply a substitute for an intergovernmental arrangement up in the Portland metropolitan area.
I see. Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to clarify, the statement just was that the Dash 1s are the preferable amendments for us to focus on, and that revenue has something similar to the Dash 2. So we'd be able to just move the Dash 1 today and say see you later.
Yes.
Does this have then a subsequent referral to the revenue?
No.
Madam Chair, there is a bill in Revenue Committee that is a bill relating to vehicle registration fees, where that discussion happened on Friday. So there is actually a vehicle, so to speak, in Revenue Committee currently.
So is it moving?
It's on Friday we had, again, late amendments and wanted to make certain that this particular piece that has to do with the collaboration in the metropolitan area was set before it moved out of committee. So it may move. Hopefully I'll return to them and suggest that it does move as long as we have agreement with all of the metropolitan area governments on it.
Thank you. Committee, at the very least, I think that we can move this bill. If it goes over to the Senate, if the other bill doesn't move, then they can fix that piece of it over there. And that way, since today's our last day, we won't get all hung up in this. So any other discussion?
So, Madam Chair, we
have a motion on the floor.
Dash one and
one.
Dash two.
Dash one.
It's just the dash one that's in play at this point.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. No other discussion? All right. Any objections? Representative Butler? All right. So noted. And
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3082 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3082 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative.
I'm sorry. I will vote no today, but reserving the right to vote yes, and Representative Reed and myself serve on the revenue, and we'll continue to work on these issues. There are. I just would like to have further information, and we did have some testimony from some of the automobile dealerships and some other folks that this might be a little bit difficult for them to collect the tax county by county. So they were concerned about that, and I need to resolve that issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Well, I want to ask a question based on Rep. Butler's comments. Counties currently can have their own registration fee. They just simply have to go to a vote of the citizens.
That's right. And Madam Chair, cities can pass gas taxes without a vote of the people. Counties can pass vote of the can pass gas taxes with a vote. So a higher standard is set of the county than is set of the city, and that's why the chair said that the county or the city council passed a gas tax and doesn't require a vote.
Madam Chair, I'm going to.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I'm going to give a yes vote to House Bill 3082 because I'm of the belief that the best government is local government. And I know of the four counties I represent that should any of the county commissioners in that county choose to move forward in a manner that is counterproductive to the will of the majority of that county, they're going to hear about it. And so I will give a yes vote.
Thank you. All right. Those of the opinion House Bill 3082 should be reported to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Butler votes no, reserving the right to change his vote on the floor.
Representative Gilman.
No.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Butler.
Aye. The motion carries. And the work session on House Bill 3082 is closed. And Carrier would be a Representative Hunt.
Yeah, he's not listening, so good sister.
I have to go back and find my agenda. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 3136. And do this.
3161.
3161.
Oh,
thank
3161.
You.
Through us.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. House Bill 3161 directs the Department of Transportation to establish a program to issue veterans recognition registration plates to veterans or veteran groups. You have before you the Dash 2 amendments. those amendments direct the department to describe in rule what constitutes proof of eligibility for each group of veterans. It applies to motor vehicles registered under ORS Chapter 803. It deletes the department's authority to design the plates and instead requires the Director of Veteran Affairs to design the recognition plates in consultation with the Department of Transportation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. Committee, any questions on this bill? I'm sure ODOT's in the back if we have anything to ask. These were their cleanup amendments. So,
Madam Chair, I visited with Mac earlier, and he says he does like the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 1 were very cumbersome, and there were some issues there that they would like to have an opportunity to work on for a later time, but the Dash 2 were acceptable to some of those veterans organizations.
Do the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3161?
Representative Tomei moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3161, dated 4-2607. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objections? Seeing none, the Dash 2 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3161 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Does it go to the floor?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Representative Tomei has moved House Bill 3161 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion House Bill 3161 should be reported to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Buckley.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Half a second. Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
Aye. The motion carries.
Madam Chair, can I suggest consent calendar for that bill?
Sounds good to me. Good. Okay. I close the work session on House Bill 3161. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2466. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2466 deals with photo radar. It's my understanding that you will be considering today the Dash 4 and the Dash 7 amendments, so I'll walk through theirs. The Dash 4 amendments restore current law such that a sign would be located between 100 and 400 yards before the photo radar unit, and it would require the sign to be posted at least 2 feet above the ground. You also now have before you the Dash 7 amendments. Those, first of all, replace sign language by deleting a posting that says photo radar ahead and instead inserting sign language to read traffic laws photo enforced. It does delete the size specifications for the bill. If you look on the original bill, that's page 1, line 23. It deletes those new sign size specifications for the sign. It authorizes the department to operate, I'll just, for clarity right now, I'm moving into the rest of the bill, which now, with the amendment, deals with photo radar in work zones. So it authorizes the Department of Transportation to operate photo radar within a highway work zone located on a state highway, but not on an interstate highway. So there's a prohibition against such units on the interstate highway. It allows the department at its own cost to ask local jurisdictions authorized to operate photo radar or to ask the Oregon State Police to operate a photo radar unit in a highway work zone. It prohibits the use of photo radar in work zones unless a sign is posted on the state highway, again, the same distance requirements between 100 and 400 yards before the location of the unit. It requires the department each biennium to conduct a process and outcome evaluation, including the effect on traffic safety, the degree of public acceptance, and the process of administering photo radar in work zones. It requires a report to the Legislative Assembly by March 1st of each odd-numbered year. It defines highway work zone. It authorizes local jurisdictions or the Oregon State Police to issue a citation on the basis of the photo radar if it is operated by a uniformed officer in a marked police vehicle and there's an indication of actual speed displayed within 150 feet of the unit. Also requires that the citation be mailed to the registered owner within 6 business days of the alleged violation. And it allows the registered owner 30 days to respond. And finally, it requires that one or more highway workers are indeed present at the time of the violation. It provides a rebuttable presumption that the registered owner was the driver, and it allows a person receiving the citation to submit a certificate of innocence or a certificate of non-liability if, in fact, they were not the driver at the time. It requires a jurisdiction receiving a certificate of innocence to dismiss the citation without requiring a court appearance by the person. And it allows the jurisdiction to reissue the citation if they believe, in looking at the picture and what was submitted by the person claiming it wasn't them that was driving the car, if it appears to be the driver that the vehicle is registered to, then it allows the jurisdiction to reissue that citation and does not allow the person to then respond by mail. It allows it make sure that they appear in person to contest any reissued citations. It allows a business or public agency to respond by submitting a certificate of non-liability if they provide the driver's license number, name, and address of the employee, renter, or lessee of the who had custody or control of the vehicle at the time of violation. It allows for the issuance of a citation to that named driver. It allows a default judgment if the registered owner fails to respond within 30 days, and then further allows relief from the court if the person did appear to fail to respond due to mistake, inadvertence, surprise, or excusable neglect. I like that. Finally, bear with me, it applies standard speeding violation penalties, nothing additional to that, and it codifies this in the Oregon Vehicle Code, and it finally would repeal these work zone photo radar provisions on December 31st, 2014, so that the legislature may review that policy. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. You also have before you the Dash 5 amendments, and those increase the list of cities for which photo radar would be allowed. That is, it would add Gladstone, Milwaukee, and Oregon City as jurisdictions that may indeed operate photo radar at their own expense. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Committee, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to have an opportunity to talk with Matt Garrett?
We have. We can talk with Matt or whoever the department recommends.
I have several questions, Madam Chair.
Now. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed you. Senator, would you like to come forward?
Senior
Senator. My apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair, colleagues. For the record, Frank Morris. representing District 8, Albany and Corvallis. I'm here to speak in favor of the photo radar in workplace construction, having spent my life in the contracting industry and being involved in highway construction. What I can tell you from experience is that I've seen bloodshed, and the issue of safety in the workplace, it's difficult enough to address it in confined spaces like manufacturing. Out on the highway, where the variables change, conditions change, the weather changes, the time of the day changes, whether it's a holiday weekend coming up, there are just a host of variables, and workplace safety on the highway is difficult at best. And you have drivers that have, in many cases, a total disregard for workplace safety. And when you are manning a paving machine and the traffic is passing you within inches, not feet, in some cases inches, there's no substitute for having restricted speeds in order to provide safety. And so I'm here to encourage you to adopt these amendments that provide the opportunity for ODOT to implement photo radar, which I believe will lead to a greater element of safety in the workplace to try to slow drivers down. I could give you a long litany of personal experience that I've had actually out working on crews and watching the behavior of traffic. You all have seen it yourself. And this is, I think, is a reasonable measure. I know that radar is not popular, but I believe that in this case it's something that is appropriate and I believe will save lives. So, Madam Chair, colleagues, I really appreciate in work session the opportunity to share these perspectives. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Butler.
Madam Chair, I noticed that there's no sunset, or is this, I guess there is a provision, repealed the provisions in 2014. So that we'll have an opportunity to see how this works for a period of a few years and then be able to determine. And I see that they have an opportunity to report back to the every other year's legislative assembly. Are the performance measures that they report back on, will they address the things that Senator Morris has indicated, such as the numbers of violations and a decline in those violations? My hope is that there would be a decline in the violations and an increase in actual true safety conditions on the jobs.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Representative, you're spot on. Comprehensive criteria used to better inform the discussion. We think it's a practical solution. We think it has application. But we'll report back to you and let you make the decision.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other representative?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I say that I am particularly pleased that the bill provides that the highway workers be present, not necessarily that they be working.
Go ahead.
Break out there.
Go ahead, Mr. Garrett.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do appreciate the opportunity. Again, this is an opportunity for us to conduct a pilot project to evaluate the effectiveness of photo radar to enforce speeds in work zones. I think next to Senator Morris giving his testimony, and unfortunately, as the region manager up in the Portland metro area, my experiences are the same. I've unfortunately had people sent to the hospital, and thank God I didn't lose anybody while I was up there. But again, going to the hospital and addressing them and their families, it's a very difficult thing to do. This is a proactive stance to address that thing. I think setting that aside, the best testimony I could provide would be to have you suit up in safety vests and hard hats and actually get you on site. I've been there. It changes your disposition very quickly. But if I could beg the chair's indulgence, I'd like to show you the next best thing with about a 1 minute, 2 30-second spots that Troy Costalos' shop over at Transportation Safety developed to try to place people in that work frame environment.
Give them a break.
Oh. 30 seconds.
Not the way it always is.
It always is.
I can't believe they got held up in a work zone. They had one lane closed and speed limit at 35 miles an hour. Burns me up.
Yeah, but those people are working with cars flying by just a few feet away.
Come on, it doesn't look that dangerous to me. Remember, how would you like it if someone drove through your workplace at 65 miles per hour? Work zone crews are just doing their job. Oregon Road and utility workers, give them a break. Most of us feel pretty safe when we're at work. But every year, highway and utility workers are injured or killed on the job. That's because drivers aren't careful and don't slow down when they approach work zones. Think about it. How would you like it if someone drove through your workplace at 65 miles an hour? Work zone crews are just doing their job. Oregon Road and utility workers, give them a break.
Madam Chair, thank you for allowing me to do that. I simply put, we are entering into the peak construction season with OTIA. Over the next 3 years, there will be more work zones. There will be more ODOT folks as well as the construction community, men and women of that community out there exposed. I want to do everything I can to prevent that. The bottom line is we need to reduce speeds, and to reduce speeds in work zone requires enforcement. And unfortunately, there are just not enough OSP troopers to do that. I believe photo radar is a complementary tool that makes our roads, our work zones, and our highways safer for both the men and women of ODOT and the construction community. So I would submit that photo radar is a practical solution, and this pilot will allow us to determine if it's an effective tool to slow down speeds in the work zones. Madam Chair, I'm open to any questions.
Thank you. Representative Gilman.
Matt, the bill provides for state highways but not the interstates. Can you give me the rationale for leaving out interstates?
It's a good question, Madam Chair, Representative Gilman. I think the technology is challenged by the high-velocity multi-lane approach. So, again, this is a pilot. Let us see how the technology works. We'll continue to grow, but we're trying to be very disciplined in its application and make sure that the technology that we do have actually works. Future conversations, I would say.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions, if
okay.
I may. Thank you for bringing this forward, Matt. I think you took what I perceived as a silly bill and made it one with some meat on it, and I appreciate that. And that's no offense to...
Yeah.
I never thought you should be warned. If you're speeding, you ought to get caught. I just want to make sure I understand this really quick. In Section 3, the Department of Transportation may operate photo radar, and then the next paragraph down on line 14, the department at its own cost may ask a jurisdiction authorized to operate radar. Are you looking for both options, or do you anticipate the Department of Transportation just contracting this out?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, what this is, it allows us to do Oregon State Police, as well as those local law enforcement jurisdictions that can do that. So the city of Portland, or if indeed certain dashes pass, maybe the city of Milwaukee or so. So, you know, working with those folks that are out there already and being much more disciplined in targeting the photo radar equipment.
Just really quick, Madam Chair, and I'm not opposed to this, but when I read the first part of Section 3, to me, it states the Department of Transportation may operate photo radar within a highway work zone that is located, da-da-da-da. And to me, that sounds as if you and your staff, should you choose to go out and purchase one of these machines and have one of your employees operate it, that we're leaving that option open to you.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think if you go a little further in the bill, you'll see there is a discipline instilled there that you have to have a law enforcement officer on site using their discipline. So a little bit later in the bill itself, it articulates who can actually be there and operate the equipment.
Okay. Follow-up question. And then again, in Section 3, the department at its own cost may ask a jurisdiction. What dollars are you going to use to fund this?
These are federal dollars coming out of Mr. Costales' portfolio.
Okay. Just one last question. To me, it seems I'm on page 2, line 2 and line 23. To me, there seems to be an incongruence. On line 2, it says between 100 and 400 yards before the location of the FODAR radar unit. That's referring to the signage. But then down below, it says an indication of the actual speed of the vehicles displayed within 100 feet of the location. Should that 100 up above coordinate with that 100 feet, 150 feet down below?
Madam Chair, if I may defer to the smart guy here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Troy Costales, Administrator of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. Madam Chair, Representative Smith. On line 2, that is talking about the sign letting people know that photo radar is in this work zone. On line 22, it's the actual speed of the vehicle as approaching the unit. So you have a static sign that's farther up the road, 100 to 400 yards away, letting everybody know you're entering into a photo radar area. If the photo radar is being activated and being used, there's a your speed is, and that's per vehicle as they get closer approaching where the vehicle is that's actually snapping the photos. So it's two different things, static sign, active sign.
If a follow-up, just so I'm clear. So the active sign, is that the one that's taking the picture?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the active sign may or may not be hooked up to the unit. It could have an independent radar unit, just like today. You can see those standing alone, and you drive by them, and it tells you your speed. It doesn't necessarily have to be hooked up to the unit. That is being used for the photo. It's going to depend on how close they are and if they can connect the two.
What I'm struggling with is when we originally heard this bill before the amendment, what I understood from Representative Lim was we wanted to be notifying folks that they're about to be photo radared. According to this, though, that sign could be 100 yards away and the photo radar could be 50 yards further out. The active sign could be 50 yards out. They're incongruent in their distances.
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, you are correct. 100 to 400 yards out is the static sign saying you're into a photo radar zone. You're at highway speed. So that distance is giving you fair warning before you get into the spot where the actual photo radar is going to be able to detect
you. What if it's put at 100 yards, though?
Because between the time, well, it doesn't say that you couldn't do that. This is saying at a minimum, we're going to let the vehicle operator know what their speed is within 150 feet of the unit. There could be a secondary one farther out where the static sign is if they so chose to do that. It doesn't preclude them from doing a pre-warning out in front, even farther away, what your speed is. The key here was to respond to the legislative request to give them fair warning before they got into the zone, and then a more specific warning to their speed when they were close enough to the unit to say that that's what's going to be triggered.
Just, Madam Chair, I'm more than willing to give a yes vote on this. I think there's a mechanical error there. Maybe I just don't understand it.
Representative Butler.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And that brings up a good point. Troy, from a engineering standpoint, if the warning sign is out at 100 yards, which is 300 feet, and the actual photo radar unit that says 150 feet, does that give me enough time if I'm going 10 miles over the speed limit? I'm driving along in a 55 mile an hour zone, and it says construction ahead, and then I look up and it's actually dropping me down to 45. Does that 150 feet give me enough time or am I actually throwing on my brakes? Am I putting out an anchor? Or what happens to me in 150 feet?
Madam Chair and Representative Butler. If you are not excessive in your speed, you will be able to be in compliance by the time you reach the unit itself.
And just to follow up, Madam Chair, I'm very supportive of this process. I asked 2 years ago when we were passing OTEA 3 money that some of that money go for some kind of on the job enforcement, because I knew this was a problem. And I particularly expressed my concerns when they came with this bill that there be actually employees present. I travel the state an awfully lot back and forth between Eastern Oregon and the Valley. And my concern is that sometimes when I see these spots entering construction zone, I'll pass by them in the morning. The equipment's all lined up, and I'll pass by them in the early afternoon. It's lined up in the same place, and yet I am still dropping my speed from. And usually it's on the freeway, but I'm still dropping my speed from 65 down to 55. And virtually there's no one around. And so I particularly appreciate the fact that we do have employees present. I am concerned that the 150 feet is enough time to actually drop 10 miles in speed if I'm going. These are not freeway posted, but on state highways where the speed would be 55, and then all of a sudden it drops down to 40 is one that I've seen just recently. You must be going 40 miles an hour, and I'm coming off the hill going 55, and then all of a sudden I've got to be going 40, and I'm really having to throw out the anchor now that I've noticed that construction sign at the bottom of the hill. So I'm just concerned that does give us enough time, but I am fully supportive of this process because these folks do need a break, This is, as far as I'm concerned, is a lifesaver.
Yes. Good.
Thank
job.
You. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Domain.
I move the -5 amendments to House Bill 2466.
Representative Tomei has moved the -5 amendments to House Bill 2466, dated 3/27/07. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the -4 amendments to House Bill 2466.
Representative Tomei moves the -4 amendments and to 2466, dated 3/20/07. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? The -4 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the -7 amendments to House Bill 2466.
Representative Tomei moves the -7 amendments to 2466, dated 4/27/07. Any discussion? I guess I just want to say that I'm relatively comfortable with these, but I do think that maybe we might want to look at the concerns that were raised and if we need to correct that when this bill goes to the Senate. So.
Madam Chair, I just had one other comment that during the previous discussions that we had with Representative Lim, Representative Tomei, and Sergeant Dan Costello of the Portland Police Bureau, Portland Speed Division, that there's different kinds of technologies out there, and you've heard me express my concern about the very, very best technology. Is about 60% effective. And so my concern is that when the department moves forward, and certainly by giving reports frequently, we should know what the technology is. But it is very expensive technology, and I'm not sure how the Department of Transportation is going to fund all of these things that they need to do, because the computations that we were looking at were that to break even, they've got to be doing about 2,500 tickets per month on one of these, and that still is about a $45,000 cost, and that does not include the officer, the van, or the other kind of on the job kinds of things that have to be supplied. So this is not a cheap method of accomplishing this if you use the very best technology, and anything short of the very best technology gives you a flawed product. So I am concerned about that, but I'm prepared to give a yes vote to move this to the floor.
Thank you. Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, B-7 amendments are adopted.
Oh, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 20, I've got my work percent, 2466 as amended to the floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2466 as amended to the floor with a D-pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right. Those of the opinion, House Bill 2466 should be reported to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Byron.
Aye. The motion carries. Representative Tomei.
Sure.
And I close the work session on House Bill 2466. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3273.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 3273 allows the Waymaster or Motor Carrier Enforcement Officer to use warning lights or other signal for purposes of stopping a driver of a commercial motor vehicle. I'm not aware of any amendments on this particular measure. I will bring your attention to the fiscal impact statement, which we have just received. It is showing $1,180,310 as the fiscal impact in the 07-09 biennium, with a $367,851 noted for the 09-11 biennium. This is based on 106 employees going through a 12-week training course that is currently designed by the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training. That training, unfortunately, costs $11,135 per person. And with that initial training, is in addition to the refresher training that's required, results in the fiscal impact you see before you. LFO does recommend that they pursue a more cost-effective alternative to that training in the fiscal, but that's the fiscal that LFO has given us on this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. I'm going to go ahead and call up Mike Noonan. Hello.
Thanks, Madam Chair, Committee. I'm Mike Noonan. I'm President of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. I represent agriculture and what's going on in the countryside. Real quick, in Klamath Falls, I farm about 12,000 acres. I use trucks to get my stuff from harvest and up here into the Willamette Valley. I do a lot of organic production. Started my business with 100 acres a lot of years ago when I got out of college. So transportation and get it out of Klamath County is a big issue. With that being said, we have a great relationship as an agricultural industry with ODOT and Matt Garrett's staff, and we've worked with them over the past 7, 8, 10 years to help address the needs of agriculture. The main reason why I left my farm today to come here was because back in the 2000-2001 session, or 2000-2001 and 1999, there was a motor carrier enforcement got very heavy-handed during our harvest. In the case, they were pulling over trucks unwarranted and also setting up jump scales on our rural roads. One of the problems with trucking when you come out of the field is we take our best educated guess on how much a truck would weigh and how, you know, how to get it safely to the storage area. And With that being said, we're right most of the time. But when we're set up in a manner where we can't get to the field to where we store in a matter of 5 to 6 miles, it sets up a situation where us as farmers have to rely on one another and cell phones to know where they're set up in a kind of wild way and try to get somewhere to check our weights before we actually could cross those scales. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. Along with that, there was just a lot of lights and I think the biggest thing is it wasn't just in Clown Falls, it was statewide. It was in Ontario with Larry Price. It was in Pendleton. It was here in the Willamette Valley. So our fear is that if they have these rights and if this bill passes, that we could look at the same kind of overhanded enforcement. And so that's really our concern.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, thank you. And I'm going to call Kermit Mailing up. Hello.
Hey, Madam Chairman. I'm Kermit Melling. I represent the Motor Carrier Enforcement Officers through the ODOT Local of 730. I'm the Vice President. I understand a lot of what the farmers are saying. I'm a small farmer. I don't have 12,000 acres. I only have 80. I've got 4 vehicles with farm plates on it, so I do understand what they're talking about. Our state has a long ways to go, actually, to help the farmers. They are the only people that buy retail and sell wholesale. And so then with the cost of fuel and the price of equipment, I fully understand their plight. Idaho and Washington do have annual truck inspections where they do them before the harvest so that the farmers can bring their vehicles in and have them inspected prior to the harvest season going. So that they know that those trucks are in good shape before they go out on the road. As far as the weight goes, I don't know about the other districts, but I've offered, when I worked in Eastern Oregon, I worked both out of the Umatilla Port of Entry, and I've worked out of Cascade Locks before I started in the Portland unit. And we used to offer some of the farmers, when we caught them overloaded, that we would come out to the field and weigh them before they came out of the field just so they could get an idea of the water content of the wheat before they hit it. I don't think everybody does that or is that generous at times, and it should be a policy of ours to extend that to them. The idea is to save the roads, and House Bill 2033 is a perfect example of that. We're going to be spending money to counties to save these roads. We're diverting money from our own budget, and they should haul the maximum weight they can on their trucks. If the truck's designed to haul 105.5, it should. It shouldn't be hauling 115. And in some cases, they do get that heavy because of the fluctuation in the moisture content of the wheat and stuff. And I do feel sorry for them, but it's no different from them coming out in harvest than it is on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday in Portland when the garbage trucks are picking up the heavy loads from the restaurants on those 3 days. We know that's when they pick them up, and we go out and we hammer them. Not hammer, but that's when we know that we can get the most overloads, because you'll see a 4-axle garbage truck with 65,000 pounds on it, and it was a continuous problem, and it still is today. A good example of the plight that we're in: last Thursday I was working out on Highway 30 by the Sophie's Island Bridge. Went down across the construction because they're replacing that bridge. We had an industry down there was saying that trucks were coming across the bridge too heavy, so I went looking for a place to weigh them. And coming back out, there was a solo truck. It was a truss building truck that had four or five units of 2x4s on it. Well, he was pretty hefty. I got behind him. I can't stop him. Luckily, he made the light and I didn't. There had to be a trooper that was working the construction zone around the corner. So I went over to him and asked him, I said, can you stop that truck for me? It took us 20 minutes to catch up with him. And when we finally did get him caught, it was in St. John's. We pulled him over. He was 11,100 pounds over on the tandem axle. He was subsequently, by running his plate, we found out that he was suspended for not paying his road taxes. And we also found out that by weighing him that he was 5,100 pounds over the posted limit of the Sophie's Island Bridge that he came across. So, needless to say, the trooper obligingly wrote him the three citations that he had coming to him, plus we did an inspection and required him to legalize. But it took us an hour that that trooper was outside of the construction zone doing what he was supposed to be doing, which was speed enforcement in that area for a job that I could have done myself. So I do understand the plight of industry. There's a long ways that we can go to help them. I do a lot of educational things through our with our district coordinators where we go to companies and we do safety meetings. We explain size and weight form. Matt Garrett and Greg Galpani have been very good about that, and we do have a good program. But we do need the ability to use our lights in order to stop the vehicles. I contacted Mario Montesano, who used to be our training officer for 15 years, and asked him, you know, what it costs, and he couldn't really remember. But the training academy that we developed back in 1985, I believe, that we had for a lot of years, was a two-week program, and it covered our administrative rules. It covered, you know, our procedures and everything else. We had a two-day class in driving, which was in a parking lot, but it was how to change lanes at 55 miles an hour and 55 feet. It was done very well by the Monmouth at that time Police Academy down in the airport at Corvallis. Valuable training. I used it a lot when I did chain enforcement on Mount Hood. It taught me to drive quite well. But these are tools that the officers need in order to do an effective size and weight program on the back roads. It's not just pursuits. We don't do very many of those. But when you're out working portables and you set up, it doesn't take them very long to figure out where we're at. And if you're mobile, that takes away that thing. Yes, we should work with the farmers, both potato harvest. I remember potato harvest in Hermiston. They pulled out everything out of the brush, and they were hauling potatoes. And yeah, 45,000-pound tandem, not unusual in a potato truck, but it does a lot of damage. And, you know, with counties such as Sherman and Morrow, where there's, you know, Sherman County, you were talking about Curry County having 1,500 people. Sherman County has 2,500 people. Somebody has to pay for the damage to the roads, and it's not always going to be on the backs of the poor farmers. Pretty much it.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, when we heard this earlier in March, I mentioned at the time that if I could contact the folks from that I knew down in southern Oregon that was the director of that down there, that department down there, if he would if he would speak freely with me about this proposal about his Waymasters, and he's a division director of some sort down there, that I could certainly be persuaded. Since that time, I've had an opportunity, as a result of testimony by Kermit and Mike and others, to actually talk to this gentleman down there, and he, in no uncertain terms, said, we do not want our way people out chasing folks down. That is not what we want our folks to be doing. There is a rather significant fiscal in this process, and after I had that discussion with him, and he did speak very freely with me, that he felt like that there was enough on these folks' plate that he did not feel like that it was a wise thing to do. So while I was persuaded at the time, Kermit, that I would certainly support you based upon the needs that you felt like that you had and the training, which was I think we actually described it as somewhat negligible at the time. Also, that California and Washington use policemen for this kind of work, but in Idaho they do have the ability to pull away from the scales to actually pursue. I felt like that I would contact these folks, and the supervisor for Southern Oregon said he just doesn't feel like it's the safe thing to do. So I wanted to report that back, Madam Chair.
Thank Representative Tomei.
Thank you so much. Mr. Mayling, as I recall from previous testimony, you were able to do this before 2004, correct? It just changed in 2004. Am I correct in remembering that?
Chairman Byers, Representative Tomei, yes, correct.
In my memory is, well, I think you just said that you had 2 weeks training in the past. That's what it took, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm reading on page 3 where it talks about, in order to enforce commercial motor vehicle requirements, a waymaster or motor carrier enforcement officer may stop and detain vehicles exercising the same authority as a police officer. Do you folks, if you're given the same authority as a police officer, we have the same policies and procedures for safety and backup that our state police will have?
We have the OSP radios, Chairman Byers, Representative Smith. We have the OSP radios in our vans, and if we feel the need, we do radio in if we feel that we need something. Most of these guys are just, you know, they're out there doing a job, and yeah, once in a while one gets hot, but in the 14 years that I've been doing it, I've never had anybody that I couldn't, you know, talk down in a situation. So, and it's very rare. Unfortunately, there has been instances. There was on the piece of paper that went around, there was 6 incidents that they cited. 2 of those happened after our lights, and some of those had nothing to do with our officers using of the lights. One of the officers at the time was off duty in his own personal car. But there has been 1 or 2 occasions that I know of when an officer went outside of his scope of abilities, and they were terminated for it, and rightly so. That's something that, you know, when you mess up, you pay for it.
Just a quick follow up. Do the spouses want you folks doing this?
Chairman Byers, Representative Smith. Yeah, it's never been a problem. It's every trade has its agonies. It doesn't matter whether you're a tree faller or working in the shipyards. I almost got knocked off of a smokestack in the shipyards as a scaffold carpenter, and it was a lot more dangerous than what I'm doing now.
Thank you.
Kermit, it seemed to me like in some of the information that I got, there were some estimates about the percentage of trucks that pass by that don't stop, that are overweight. Do you have any idea how to estimate that?
I don't know about statewide. I know, like, in our Rock Creek scale that's on Highway 212 outside of Clackamas there just before the junction, if you're sitting there weighing on a full shift, you'll have 6 trucks bypass the scale out of maybe 100, 150. But it's in an area that you don't chase trucks down. You have to know where you're at and realize that if you do, by the time you get out of the scale house and he makes the lights and you don't, there's no way you're ever going to catch him before he gets to I-205, so why try? You're just putting yourself at liability in the state and everybody else. So I think the bigger issue is just by policy and procedure, the officers understanding what the limitations are. And that's what they have to do. And the more experienced officers that we have that are out there, they tend not to do that for one reason or another. You just don't. Maybe in the rural areas when you're out there, you might take that chance and go after somebody. I have when I worked over in Hermiston in that area. I mean, Highway 730 going toward Wallula Junction or back toward Hermiston is pretty remote and pretty isolated. So, you know, in that case, a person, you know, you're not going to have traffic. So you just have to use good judgment, and that's something that we have to educate our people to do.
So, and another one, did you? Yes, okay. The counties are able to do this now, aren't they? Or some?
Chairman Byers, Lane County, Douglas County, Clackamas County, those are the counties I'm familiar with. Marion County all have unarmed motor carrier enforcement officers. Lane County, where you're from, has they're assigned to the sheriff's office, but they're unarmed. They have the same training that we had prior to the DOJ's opinion, and they do make traffic stops. Clackamas County, we actually trained the last employee of Clackamas County ourselves. He came and worked with my staff, and he's allowed to make stops, although they don't write citations. They'll stop and weigh a truck, but for some reason, don't ask me why, they don't issue citations rarely.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for one more opportunity just to speak to this particular piece of legislation, proposed legislation. But one of the things that continues to impress me is the issue of field-loaded farm trucks. And in Mount Hare County, we have a special provision because our borders aren't anymore in some places where the river has changed course between the state of Idaho and the state of Oregon. You can drive into a field on the Idaho side, load up, and then drive out of the same field on the Oregon side of the border. The concern was that on the Idaho side, the weight limit was several thousand pounds higher than on the Oregon side. And so what virtually was happening was that it was smarter for the truck driver to start delivering the produce into Idaho, and as a result of that spawned a whole new industry in the Parma, Idaho area away from Nisa, Oregon, and Ontario, Oregon. To address that situation, we came and addressed parts of the farm field loaded bill, and maybe that's an area, and what we did to resolve that was actually a moneymaker, because we encouraged the farmers to buy a heavier load permit as they were coming out of the field, and then the difference on a field loaded as Kermit has talked about, the weight density of grain in the field, you just don't know what it is until you get across the scales a couple of times, and then you've got to convince the combine to cut off the feed chain several seconds earlier than what they otherwise would have if you have high moisture grains. So there's lots of concerns in this issue, and I think that it probably with regard to the agriculture portion should be addressed by the Transportation Committee in a more thoughtful and a more rational approach. But with regard to the instant bill, I just have to tell you that after my conversations with the folks in the Motor Carrier Transportation Division, I can't support this bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm looking at the fiscal, and the last paragraph of the fiscal said, while practical, the bill does not require any training. Do we know, I assume nobody from fiscal is here who wrote this statement. So, and they say that ODOT is requiring a 12-week training program. They say that is overdone, and apparently it was a 2-week training before that seemed to work okay for folks. I'm assuming this goes to Ways and Means.
It will now.
Okay. Because of the big fiscal?
Yeah.
And they seem to be saying that the big fiscal is not necessary, but I guess we could send it to Ways and Means if the committee desires, and let the Ways and Means subcommittee decide if that were appropriate.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Tomei.
Madam Chair.
Representative Buckley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Taking off what Representative Tomei was discussing, when I saw this fiscal, it motivates me to move this bill. I like working with the folks at ODOT, but this fiscal just is absurd to me. The fact that they, you know, if you talk about trying to kill a bill, this is so blatant to me that I want to keep the bill alive just because out of that principle. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on Representative Buckley's thought, do we have an opinion from the Director of the Department of Transportation on this bill?
And Madam Chair, the notes also indicated that there was possibly some fiscal impact from not just the training, but also the equipment that was required at that particular point. So I don't know how much of this is training and how much is equipment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matthew Garrett, Director of ODOT, specific to the fiscal, it really is taking the direction we receive from the Public Safety Standards and Training Board, saying here's the protocols that we would suggest, and then just crosswalk. So with all due respect, Representative Buckley, I understand what you're saying, but I can't agree that it's a dagger. It's just a simple mathematic walk across from the course, the number of people, and yields the amount.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, has the department taken a position on this bill?
Sure. I think, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I thought Jack Evans, when he spoke to the committee, did a very good job of saying, listen, this is a policy call, and we certainly appreciate we're neutral on the policy call. The bottom line is we want to make sure when Kermit and his colleagues, if indeed you move in one direction, Kermit and his colleagues are trained, they're safe, and the traveling public is safe. So that's the bottom line specific to training. It's all about the safety of the motoring public and the good folks out there doing their job.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Garrett. Appreciate you, your testimony. I know that you're fairly new as a director of ODOT, but you were in ODOT before that, correct?
Yeah.
So if they stopped doing this in 2004, were you employed by ODOT while they were still doing this?
Madam Chair, Representative Tolman, yes.
So do you know, and apparently at that time they had 2 weeks training, did that appear to be sufficient at that time?
Madam Chair, Representative Tolman, this is what I know. I don't know the specifics, but I do know that the question was called, and the Department of Justice gave an opinion, and their opinion was there's a liability with the amount of training that you've been given because there was an independent study, and I can't give you the specific date, but an independent study looking at the training that was given. And they raised the issue that it may have not been as robust as it should be. So based on an independent review and then based on a DOJ opinion, which again was reacting to a complaint that came our way, we called the question because we thought we were compromising safety. That was the position of the agency up until this discussion where we're having a healthy policy discussion.
Madam Chair, I don't think that we have that opinion in our file, Louis?
Representative Tomei, it was in the notebook, if I remember right, that was handed out to us when we first heard this bill. And it also mentioned that the DOJ recommended that they clarify this through the legislative process. And that's what they're trying to do now.
If I can clarify, if I recall correctly, the DOJ opinion had to do with whether statutory authority existed for the practice, but I don't recall the testimony being that DOJ brought the safety issue as an issue.
And that I'm not sure of, but there was information in there on the study that was done on the safety issue.
Madam Chair, do you recall whether or not they indicated the number of weeks of training that DPSSD would require?
I meant to bring that book down with me. It's sitting in my office. I had taken it home and looked at it over the weekend, but I don't know if that was in there or not. Do you recall?
I'm not sure. The Val Lubin's study was done in 1997, and I don't think it made a recommendation as far as the number of weeks or of that type. It did, I think, address some of the types of training that should be conceded in there, but it did not address the other one.
Follow-up?
And Madam Chair, thank you for the follow-up. There's no evidence in this SMS relative to the fiscal as to the dollar amount that it would require to bring the equipment standards back up. And that's of concern to me. That could, the training could certainly be at $1.2 million for the current biennium, but then I have no idea what the new equipment would be required, lighted and those kinds of things. That's we're several years out of date on that, so that would require an additional fiscal as well.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm supportive of this, and I, since I'm on the Ways and Means Sub for Transportation, I would like to see it go to the sub, and we can look at the fiscal a little more thoroughly. So I would move House Bill 3273 to the committee on Ways and Means.
Did we adopt the amendments yet?
No amendments.
We have not.
There are
no amendments.
Thank you.
No amendments.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill, I've lost it, 3273 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'll continue to be a no on this particular bill. My fear is that that this $1.2 million is potentially just the beginning, and that there could be some safety, and I believe that's why the division director down in Southern Oregon was expressed concern was really for the well-being and safety of his staff.
Thank you. Representative Gilman.
Madam Chair, I'll also be a no.
Thank you. And I just want to clarify that it's not, I'm not wanting to pass this bill because I want to go out and harass truckers. I think my and my concern are not the interstates. My concerns have been the highway systems that people, and I don't want to insinuate everyone, but I think I've read that about 30% we lose 30% for trucks that aren't complying with the weight regulations, with the rules to stop, and maybe there are legitimate reasons for that. But this is money that, I mean, this is damage to the roads when these trucks are overweight. And there could be danger to our drivers in the state when some of the drivers are not rested, if their loads are dangerous. So that's my concern, and that's why I want to move this bill and have the discussion down in Ways and Means on whether or not this fiscal is accurate. It does remind me of a bill in one of my previous sessions that someone didn't like and put a huge fiscal on. And even though I didn't like the bill either, I was a little dismayed that the fiscal was so high on it. But so I'm hoping that number crunchers and stuff can look at this bill down there.
Point of clarification?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is the motion to move the bill to Ways and Means without recommendation?
I don't think the motion is clarified.
No. Thank you for asking that. No, it would be with the due pass recommendation.
And I'm sure that doesn't change any of the no votes, right? Any other discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion that House Bill, again, I've lost it. I've covered it up. 3273 should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the committee on Ways and Means. Will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Butler?
No.
Representative Gilman?
No.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Chair Beyer?
Aye. Motion passes, and I'm going to close the work session on 3273. Okay, I'm going to move on to House and open a work session on House Bill 2827. We're getting there, committee.
Yeah,
doing great. Only Representative Gilman.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2827 prohibits the state from expending funds to comply with the Federal Real ID Act. And to provide states with adequate funding to implement the Real ID Act. You have before you the -3 amendments are the ones we're working off of currently. Those amendments replace the original bill. It authorizes the Department of Transportation, in compliance with the Federal Real ID Act, to, number one, file for an extension, number two, submit implementation plans with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and three, to enter into any agreement with a federal agency, agency of another state, or the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators necessary to comply with these provisions.
Madam Chair, do we have an SMS on this? I have the amendments, but I do not have an SMS.
Well, I got you two there.
Thank you.
Pardon me. Thank you, Representative Butler, for pointing that out. I
You're a busy lady.
A late coming estimate.
Madam Chair, may I get a copy of that?
Here we go.
Oh, so we got an extra one here. Thank you.
Everyone has them. Okay. The Dash 3 amendments further allow the department to perform any system development necessary to implement the Federal Real ID Act. And if you will look on page 2 of the Dash 3 amendments, starting on line 2, you'll see what is included in what's considered system development. It directs the department to analyze safeguards necessary to assure adequate privacy protections for individuals and to prevent unauthorized disclosure of personal identifying information. It would repeal the provisions we just discussed on May 30th, 2013. The Dash 3 amendments would further require the department to maintain suitable records for driver's licenses, driver's permits, and identification cards that include the Social Security number of the person to whom the document is issued. It specifies that submission of biometric data does not excuse a person from providing proof of date of birth or address. It would authorize the department to determine the form of name required, and they'll do this by rule. It requires the license to bear a signature. It allows the latest photograph on file to be used in circumstances defined by rule by the department. It allows the department to issue a valid license without a photograph for good cause as determined by rule, including but not limited to religious grounds. It directs the department to work with other agencies and organizations to improve the issuance system for identification cards. It places provisions in the Oregon Vehicle Code. And finally, the amendment would declare an emergency effective upon passage. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. And this is the second amendment. There were a couple of changes. And I don't know if you've pointed them out, but there's on the first page on line 18, it has been added the piece on what is necessary to comply with the requirements. That the to comply language has been added. And then on the second page, in section 4, you'll see where it says in carrying out the provisions, the department shall analyze and safeguard the safeguards necessary to assure adequate privacy protections for individuals and prevent unauthorized disclosure of an individual's personal identifying information. So those are two additions to the amendment. Otherwise, it should be the same as the one we heard in the public hearing.
Madam Chair, relative to Section 4 on page 2, lines 24 through 26, assuring the privacy and preventing unauthorized disclosure, if this was the same as the privacy and unauthorized disclosure as provided for by the Department of Revenue relative to the same kinds of information, there would be some very onerous penalties. Are there penalties provided in this section for someone who chooses just to ignore the privacy rights of individuals and protecting their protecting sacred their information?
It has been pointed out that the language in line 22 that says they shall analyze the safeguards necessary, so they aren't at the penalty phase in this.
Madam Chair, is there a fiscal with this, or is this going
yes.
to ways and means? Or
yes, this definitely has a fiscal on it of about $65 million over a three biennium cycle.
Thank you.
$65 million
over three biennium years. Over 3 years? Six years?
6 years.
All right.
Put your checkbook out now.
Then I am totally confused, Madam Chair, if I may ask a question. So the measure prohibits the state from expending funds to comply, but you're saying it costs $62 million?
The amendment.
The amendment replaces
it. Replaces
the original bill.
All right, I see. Thank you.
Yes.
So do you need a motion?
I'm going to need a motion if everybody's ready to go to that point yet. I haven't had a chance to look at it.
So, Madam Chair, does Representative Tomei get to wrestle with this in Ways and Means then? Are we just placing it? Then I'm happy with it.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Representative Gilman gets that same pleasure.
Madam Chair, I just had one quick question, and I was out of the room when this was discussed the other day, but I was tapped in on the tube with regard to some of the testimony. One of the concerns that was mentioned was that the possibility was that the federal government would require for federal installations certain identification mandatory. One of those installations would certainly be the international airports, including Portland, and that at some particular point before Oregon would actually be ready in 2013 to move forward, that we would have folks lined up at our airports that had to have their passports or other federal ID, authorized federal ID. Is that being resolved as a part of this delay?
Federal requirement, we have no control. Right. And this is not really a delay, actually. This actually just directs the department to work towards implementation and gives them, if the budget committee has any say about it, would give them the authority to move that direction. And if that is a part of it, then that is moving towards implementation of the Real ID.
And perhaps Judith could direct us to the paragraph where the language talks about allows the department to issue a valid ID without a photo for good cause is determined by rule, including religious grounds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Butler, if you look on page 12, starting on line 17, the dash three amendments.
It also appears over on page 14, is that right? The same.
Repeats again on page 14, that's true. Lorna, I guess I should bring you up in case people have questions that you're more capable of answering than me. So is that...
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, your question again as it went on.
Lorna, my question dealt with the director shall include religious preferences, good cause for issuance of license without a photograph, but shall not limit the cause for religious grounds. If I'm having a bad hair day, I'm assuming that is not a religious grounds, but it gives the authorization to the director to for good cause to issue license without a photograph. Number one, what are the religious grounds, and what are the other good cause grounds to not have a photograph or other biometrics?
For the record, Lorna Youngs, DMV Administrator. Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's currently in authority that we have today to issue a valid without photo. The primary time in which we issue a valid without photo is when a person is out of the country, for example, serving in military service, their license expires, they need their driver license renewed. Upon returning to the state, then they get a valid with photo. So it doesn't serve any identification purposes. It's a driver license renewal process. What this bill does is help deal with the fact that when the central issuance and facial biometric bill is implemented in 2008, the ability to issue valid without photo disappears. But there are still instances where individuals who are out of the state would need to have a driver license for driving purposes. So that's still that simply is the reason why it appears twice, because it changes not only statute, but it changes the implementation of Oregon laws, which go into effect in 2008.
Follow up, if I may, Madam Chair. Lorna, how do we issue real ID at any point in the state of Oregon in the future if we can't access either photo or biometrics as a result of a religious conviction that I don't want you to, I feel that I'm giving you the number to the beast.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, those individuals that did not have a photo on their driver license would not have a real ID compliant license. So this would allow for another kind of license that wouldn't necessarily be real ID compliant.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gilman.
I move the Dash 3 amendments to 28-27, dated 4-30-07.
Representative Gilman moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 28-27, dated 4-30-07, to House Bill 28, well, I think I already said that. to House Bill 28-27. Any discussion? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will give a courtesy yes to this. I don't like the unfunded mandate part of this. I'm glad we have the joint memorial to state our opinion on this, but this seems to be where we have to do. So, reluctantly, I will.
Thank you. Representative Tomei. And then
thank you, Madam Chair. I have grave concerns about this whole issue, Madam Chair. We heard some very compelling testimony last week about the gravity of this, and I think it's just a mess of worms, and I'm certainly concerned about the unfunded mandate also, and the fact that we'll be spending $65 million on something that sounds like it is a real mess. So I have some grave concerns. I'm not sure that we have a lot of other options here. I also will be voting yes, and I will be looking at it more thoroughly in the Ways and Means Committee.
I certainly can appreciate that, Representative Smith. I mean, Butler, see?
The other blue shirt.
Yeah, that's right. And red tie.
Madam Chair, I'll be voting no on this. I am anxious about all of the issues that surround the whole Real ID, and until I find out more about it personally, this is an issue which raises very rapidly to the national level, and Oregon is suffering from an extraordinarily high amount of identity loss in this process. And if we think that the cost of $65 million is a lot today, become one of those people who has lost your ID. I tease people that 6 months ago in the Salt Lake Airport, I lost my check. A checkbook, my driver's license, and my wallet, and I just reported it last week because the guy who found all of that stuff has been spending less per month than we were.
Any other discussion? And committee, I share all of your concerns. I certainly wonder how much this is going to do to improve national security, and if so, why isn't the federal government ponying up some money to help us do it? Identity theft issues are there in my mind, but I do think that we need to move something down and start looking at how we're going to deal with it. I know the Senate last week passed out a bill that says we aren't going to do it. So you may have that option too. You never know. Thank you for all your concerns, and Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, I don't know which is the right direction to go, and with that, I think I'll just cast a no vote on this.
Thank you. All right. So those of the opinion that House Bill 28-27, the Dash 3 amendments, House Bill 28-27, dated 4-30-07, should be adopted. I guess those.
Madam Chair,
any objection? I'm past this, you know, you guys.
Don't we move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 28-27?
Well, they have been moved.
Well, they
have been
okay.
Moved. Yes, okay. Thank you. And I asked if any objections, and it looks like
I'm sorry,
Representative Butler, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So noted, and the motion then carries. The amendments are adopted. Now we're past that one. So,
Madam Chair, I move 28-27 as amended, the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Gilman moves House Bill 2827 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion that the House Bill 2827 should be reported to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
No.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Byer.
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you, committee. I am going to skip over, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bills 3018 and House Bills 2653. And,
Madam Chair, just very quickly, you and I both serve on the Energy and Environment Committee. Do you have an update on how?
We are being called, so I'm going to go ahead and open this public hearing, and we can run over and vote.
Okay.
So, Judith. My apologies. I'll be right back, everybody.
Have a good time.
Okay, we've opened the public hearing on 3018. And Judith, do you want to talk to us a little bit?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Is it only on 3018, Judith, or did we open on 2653 as well?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, we had opened previously briefly on House Bill 3018. That measure increases motor vehicle registration fees and dedicates 25% of the revenue increase to projects of statewide significance. The House Bill 3018 did have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but we have in our possession a letter from the Speaker giving us permission instead to move that to revenue. And then also on House Bill 2653, that measure increases the fuel tax by 5 cents on January 1st, 2013, and on January 1st, every 5 years thereafter. This measure does also have a subsequent referral initially from to the Committee on Revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'll call up Steve Clark and Randy Pape.
Chair Gilman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Clark. I'm president of the Portland Tribune and Community Newspapers and co-chair with my partner Randy Pape in the Oregon Business Plan Initiative on Transportation. We thank you again for the opportunity to appear before you. We offer our support and the support of the Oregon Business Plan and its Transportation Initiative Steering Committee for House Bills 3018. And as we understand it, there is a dash 5 flying around somewhere, and House Bill 2653 have written testimony we'll provide you. We are prepared to work with this committee and the House Revenue Committee to help craft legislation for increased transportation funding. that as before we've offered should be significant, strategic, and sustainably invested in Oregon's entire transportation system. Before Representative Smith had to leave, he earlier talked about the importance of an entire system, not just in communities that could afford to improve or would choose to vote to improve their given transportation system. We believe it's an entire state, and the state relies on an entire system of state, city, and county roads. We call upon each of us as Oregonians to work with each of you and the entire 2007 Oregon legislature to approve such a package of transportation investments. This is going to take leadership directed at outcomes that invest in the state, city, and county road systems, as I said. Without such investments, we place our state's livability, its economy, public safety, and past infrastructure investments at growing risk. That was clearly pointed out in the statewide travel delay economic study that we presented to you several weeks ago. While we're committed to work with you and the Oregon legislature, the highway users represented behind us today, and with citizens, we're also committed to focus not only on increased funding, but on outcomes that are publicly transparent, accountable, and beneficial to Oregon, and as I said, its economy and its citizens. Oregon is at a crossroads. Other states around us are investing, Washington, California, Idaho, and others. We must also. As House Bills 3018 and 2653 propose, we cannot wait. By waiting, we'll continue to fall further behind other states and place Oregon at greater risk. We do look forward to continuing to work with you, the House Revenue Committee, and the full 2007 Oregon legislature to both create legislation and adopt it this session, and to provide the best possible legislation that will significantly, strategically, and sustainably invest in Oregon's transportation system. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Excuse me.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your time. I had a great deal to say 2.5 hours ago, and after thinking a great deal about it, I thought, you know, I probably had less of importance at that point in time, and so I'll try to get to the specifics because of the lateness of the hour. However, please indicate to me, sir, the time that you all may have. There are a number of people who have indicated that they would like to testify on behalf of the two House bills, House Bill 3018 and House Bill 2653, that would support funding for public transportation, highway transportation going forward. And what I would propose to do, if your time is limited, as I suspect it may be, is that maybe I could read from the list of people and just ask some of the folks who have indicated to just stand and show their support, if that would be appropriate. Would that the list of folks that I've passed around to you is the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon, Association of General Contractors, Association of Oregon Counties. By the way, these are all people who are here or were here. Associated Oregon Industries, Columbia Corridor Association, Commercial Real Estate Economic Coalition, East Metro Economic Alliance, League of Oregon Cities, Oregon Home Builders Association, Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association, the Oregon Business Council, which I represent as well, the Oregon State Oregon State Chamber of Commerce, Port of Portland, Portland Business Alliance, Westside Economic Alliance, Clackamas County Business Association, Gresham Area Chamber of Commerce, Medford Area Chamber of Commerce, North Industrial Neighborhood Association, Northwest Industrial Neighborhood Association. There are a number of others who have signed on to support improving the transportation network by increasing the funding. However, they were unable to join us today. I don't know that I need to review the testimony that I gave several weeks ago to your committee about the importance of transportation improvements to our state, to our economy, to the safety, soundness, and livability of our state. But I would, again, reemphasize, recall those points to your mind and suggest that we need to continue our emphasis that you have begun in the legislative process in the last 6 or 8 years through OTIAs 1, 2, and 3. Also, the Connect Oregon programs. There is currently a bill in Connect Oregon 2. As you all know, those are bills that would provide funding for non-highway projects, whereas we're talking specifically here about highway projects that would help relieve congestion and improve freight mobility throughout our system. I understand that there may be some questions which we would be happy to entertain of the Business Coalition proposals relative to items 3, 4, and 5 that discuss aspects of the proposal, which overall would raise $350 million for city, states, and counties. That would be split according to the normal formula, $175 million to states, to the state highway program, and $175 million to cities and counties. The cities and county breakdown would be $105 million to counties and $70 million to street city street programs. Of course, this would be once the program is fully funded per the outline given, which has flexibility to it, and we are greatly enthusiastic about hearing how you would respond and suggest that we move forward. As we talk about item 3, the 25% suggests that there's that would be an ability to move our respective governmental areas closer together so that we talk about the system, as Steve Clark mentioned earlier, as a whole, because as you understand, traveling through from point A to point B, you oftentimes go through various jurisdictional areas, and this would be helpful, we believe, in having the coordination of cities, counties, and the state and federal money to move projects on a system-wide basis. Item 4 speaks about reporting back to you all in the legislature. We think that's a very important process, that we come together and let you know where these funds are being expended and how they're anticipated to be expended. And then item 5 speaks to the bonding, where we feel that bonding is important. There's a certain limit to what we feel is appropriate to bond in our future.
I am totally lost. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm looking through my materials here. I have no idea what you're referring to. When you say item 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Packet, the proposal, the Business Coalition proposal that was submitted to you several weeks ago, but Nate, Duncan, do you have that? Or where's Jeremy?
Could we go back maybe to the two bills? So as I look at the bills, I understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Thank you. So if we could look at 3018-6, the dash 6 amendment, I just want to make sure that I understand. Thank you.
Yes.
So this would increase the registration fee from what it is now, $3 for one plate and $5 for two. It would increase the registration plate from to $20 for a single plate and $40 for a pair of plates. Is that correct?
That's correct on the proposal, on the bills that are put before you.
Right. Okay.
And those are what we are recommending that you move forward to the Revenue Committee, House Bill 3018 and House Bill 2653.
Okay, and if I for a follow-up, thank you. So House Bill 2653, there's no amendment, correct? There's no amendment.
Correct.
So this bill would increase the license fee, license tax, gasoline tax, I'm assuming. It says license tax.
One is a license tax and one is a gas tax.
Well, isn't 2653 a fuel tax?
Yes.
Chair Gilman, in line 20, license tax.
Chair Gilman, Representative May, the two pieces of legislation do two different things. One deals with raising funds through the vehicle registration fee. That's House Bill 3018. House Bill 2653 deals with the gasoline tax, and both in their context have appropriate weight mile considerations for large vehicles. Our request is that you advance this to the House Revenue Committee, where we could work with members of the House, yourselves, members of that committee, to craft legislation that would be able to be adopted by this legislative session in 07. As Randy said, our proposal calls for a staggered increase in the gasoline tax over the next several years. We think both the current legislation as proposed and our proposal have a great opportunity for collaboration and accomplishment, and so we would like to work within the House Revenue Committee to achieve that that agreement.
Okay, and if I could clarify, Mr. Chair, earlier we had heard that it was the gasoline tax would be increased every year, but as I read on page 2, line 12, it would be on January 1st, 2013, and on January 1st of each fifth year thereafter, the rate of the excise tax and excise tax is the gasoline tax. So that, is that correct?
Representative Chair Gilman, Representative Tomei, as this legislation was introduced, that is correct. The Oregon Business Plan Steering Committee and the business plan represented by the coalition of folks here today would offer what Randy had suggested to you, which was a combination of a $25 annual vehicle registration fee, a $10 per title fee, and then as it relates to House Bill 2653 and the state gasoline tax and its appropriate weight mile, our proposal would be that in January of 2008, the gasoline tax be increased 4 cents, in January of 2009, 3 cents, in January of 2010, 2 cents, and in January 2011, 2 cents. There are some...
That's not a follow-up, please.
No, that is not
the amendment would be House Bill 30...
That's...
Oh, excuse me.
What we had understood, and we're apologetic that this dash is not available to you or us today, was that Legislative Council was working to create that language. If that's not available before you today, my understanding of the legislative process, and you're the experts, I'm just the blood-sucking newspaper publisher, is that we would encourage you to pass these bills to revenue and allow the legislative process with the coalition of supporters to work together.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, Randy, as we come and change or propose a change in the gasoline tax, and then we propose a change in the weight mile tax, the Constitution provides that there must be accountability and cost accountability. If I am staggering one without staggering the other, don't I move out of the proportions that I should remain on for the constitutionality purposes?
I don't believe so, Representative Butler. I believe that each one would have cost responsibility. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
As well?
Chair Gilman, Representative
Butler, revenue source.
As one increased, the other would have to increase as well, so that accountability that is required would be preserved.
Follow up, if I may. It appears that the weight mile is all in one fell swoop. It's not staggered, other than by weights and class of vehicles and a registration fee up front. But that you have an amendment that changes the 2013 5 cents, and then each 5 years thereafter the 5 cents, is that going to meet the constitutional requirement?
Yes, it will, when those amendments are put into place.
Are meshed.
Yes.
Okay.
And that would happen if the bills move forward.
One more follow-up in this regard, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Randy. Let me just ask this. Randy, we're proposing yet another increase in registration in vehicles in Oregon. I think in the five sessions that I have served in the Legislative Assembly, I think four of those five sessions have had an increase. We started at X number of dollars, and we're about five times that now. What have other states adjacent to us done with regard to their registration fees? I know that they have sales tax and they have ad valorem values in California and so forth on license plates. Have any states adjacent to us over the last 10 years done anything in proportion to what has happened with regard to Oregon's increases in registration fees?
Yes, Chair Gilman and Representative Butler, they have, and I'm trying to look in my notebook here for the specifics of those. If there's a ODOT staff member in the room, they may be able to give you the specifics of that while I look through my information.
Okay. Next question, if I may, Mr. Chair. Oregon has consistently over the last several years been in the top five, I believe, states in the nation relative to its gas prices, gasoline prices, and we are one of a few states that has this system of weight mile calculation on commercial vehicles. What will a 4 cent, 3 cent, 2 cent, 1 cent, or a 5 cent and a 5 cent do to our gas prices in Oregon in relationship to adjacent states or all states in the West relative to gas prices in the state of Oregon?
Great question, Representative Butler and Chair Gilman. We think it will still be very competitive. California has done a significant amount of increasing their fuel revenues through various systems. The state of Washington recently has increased their gas tax by 9 cents, I believe, phased in over the last several years. So we've looked at that very closely and believe that we will be still very competitive in relation to those states. Recall that those states also have a sales tax that I believe, I'm not certain in both of them, but I believe at least California has a sales tax as well as the federal highway tax. But I would defer to an expert if we have one in the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll come back. I was handed some information on the registration. The fuel tax question would put us in the 15th to 16th, if I'm reading the handwriting correctly, 45th percentile on the registration fee and 34th number, not, excuse me, I said percentile, and the number of states would put us 34th at $55 per transaction. Is that
pretty well
answer the question that you had,
Mr. Chair? I guess I'm not concerned about just what those values are, because I know California has an ad valorem value for their registration, but I just wondered in relationship to how much Oregon's has increased, because Oregon has at least doubled and probably tripled, so it's a 300% increase. I know that it started low, but we are still among the highest in the nation with regard to our overall gas prices. And I don't know whether that's a supply distribution problem or whether that's a function of self-service. I guess the final question I'd have is that normally when we've seen these kinds of proposals come forward, 3018 and 2653 that because of the constitutional issue related to proportionality and the cost responsibility, we usually see that come forward in a work group as a work group bill with weight mile in one portion of it, gasoline costs in another, and this appears to be a whole series of changes in plate cost and stamping fees and single plates and double plates and those kinds of things. It seems to be that this isn't as organized, if I can say that, and I hate to tell you. I mean, you come up to my office and then we'll talk about organization. We see my floor.
I appreciate what you all are saying, Chair Gilman and Representative Butler. The two bills have been put together in initially proposed through the process. I believe that as they mature and as the discussion continues to be pulled together and formatted over the legislative session, you'll see these coming together. And the business coalition proposal is in another amendment, which I'm not sure whether that's been proposed to the committee yet or not. I'm a little confused about that at this point in time in terms of your process. But there is an amendment that relates to the business proposal that you have had, and that amendment, I believe, is before you or has been put through the legislative council and is prepared to move as these bills move into revenue.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Tomei.
Thank you. This, whoever gave me this, thank you very much. This is the material I think that you had handed out to us, the cost of congestion and traffic delay.
Yes.
And if you have more of these, I think everybody up here should get one.
Chair Gilman, Representative Tomei, we will do that, and that provides many of the questions.
Well, I know. So I'd like to read from that because I think responding a little bit to Representative Butler's concerns. The registration fee, as I think Mr. Pape was saying, is 47th in the nation, and if we increased it to $20, it would be 42nd in the nation.
45th, that's correct.
Yeah. And the title fee is $55, is 38th in the nation.
34th.
I have my materials.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is the updated information.
Okay. And the gas tax at 24 cents per gallon is 16th in the nation. Washington State has the highest gas tax in the nation at 34 cents. California, in essence, if their gas sells at $2.50, they're paying 33 cents in tax. And the tax has not been raised since 1993, and if we had raised it to keep up with inflation, it would be 35 cents a gallon. And the automobile-related taxes in our neighboring states is higher. The neighboring states are higher. Oregon's expenses are one-third that of California and one-half that of Idaho, and also one-third that of Washington State. So thank you for these materials, and I hope you get them to all of them.
Chair Gilman, our belief was...
Do you have anything further?
Well, our understanding was this would be an opportunity to aid you in referring this legislation to revenue, where, as Representative Butler wisely pointed out, hard work, a work committee, a rump group does a lot of...
You understand why we need to do it, because we've got to move all these bills someplace.
Yes, sir.
These House bills.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, thank you for bringing these proposals forward. And just want to comment while we have you there. Mr. Clark, your testimony, as I read it over, we could pretty much take the word transportation out and replace it with the word education, and we'd have the exact same accuracy with your testimony. I'll be supportive of your work to move these to revenue today, and I look forward to working with you as we continue the session on trying to address both our transportation needs. And I know that you gentlemen and and the organizations you mentioned will be also helpful in addressing our education needs as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very important.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I really don't want you to be confused whatsoever. Just as a point of clarification, I too had a question regarding why on, let's start with 2653, that language is repeated twice, that the 5 cent fuel tax, that is just the fuel tax. I did call Legislative Council as well as Revenue to, with the same question as you had, Representative Tomei, and it is only a 5 cent fuel tax. It's considered an excise tax to the public, and then it turns around and gets deposited with the state through a license tax from the distributor, since we are a non-sales tax state. So that's a single nickel that's considered an excise tax to the public, and then it's considered a quote-unquote license tax as the distributor then provides that money to the state.
Judith, when that comes in, then it is divided locally as well. Is that correct? From that account? That's correct. The account that goes part to cities, part to counties, and road
that distribution point. Correct.
Thank you.
And also on the other 3018, and I do apologize because we did just receive these -6 amendments from Senator Metzger shortly before committee. I did want to point out that in addition to the registration fee issue we're talking about there, I just wanted to note that we're also talking about highway user tax bonds. But again, both of these bills are moving to Revenue. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I might make note that Representative Reed is our expert in revenue on highway use bonds and highway taxes and so forth. So. He's really anxious to have these down there.
If you could move to a
work session, I think there's enough of us here to just do that.
I have a bit of an issue here.
Oh yeah, let me talk.
I'd just ignore him if I were you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, many of those people have agreed to waive their public testimony opportunity. I don't know who all signed up, but at least a good number of those folks, as I mentioned earlier, if that would be appropriate. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner Sam Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'll distribute copies of my testimony in a minute. My name is Sam Adams, and I'm the Transportation Commissioner for the City of Portland, a member of the Portland City Council, but my intention today is to speak on behalf of cities throughout Oregon regarding the transportation crisis that we face, cities and local governments. Because we are facing a transportation crisis in cities and counties in Oregon, its symptoms show up every day in terms of hundreds of unnecessary transportation-related deaths and injuries, job-depleting congestion that reduces the downtowns of many cities to gridlock every day, and a backlog of infrastructure maintenance that turns the price tag of what should be routine maintenance into high-priced major rebuild projects. Oregon cities maintain 20,000 lane miles of streets and roads. In the past 10 years, 35% of Oregon's population, there was a 35% increase in the percentage of Oregon population living in cities, and we are up to almost 70% of city residents in Oregon. Since 1993, as you've already mentioned, the gas tax rate has been flat, while at the same time, in the same amount of time, the related cost for transportation has increased 70%. The Oregon League of Cities put together a good book called City Streets, Investing in a Neglected Asset. And it estimates, and it's a low-confidence estimate because more detailed work is needed to collect the information from all cities and local governments. But just for cities, they estimate that it would take another $160 million per year to get to sort of get on top of this basic backlog. Let me give you some examples of failures of transportation systems throughout Oregon in cities. Baker City needs resurfacing on its downtown streets to a cost of $250,000. Lincoln City's Deviled Lake Roads, just the one road in the city, and they have many, would cost $1.7 million. Shady Cove needs to build Rogue River Drive at a cost of $1.9 million. Springfield, on its bus routes, need to be rebuilt. They were not built to handle the heavy buses at a cost of $5 million. On your drive home, or if you take Chariots Transit home, you'll be traveling over streets in the Salem downtown area that are failing to the point of needing $8 million in rebuild. And in Ashland, as you know, there is a major safety issue with railroad improvements that they estimate will cost $1.4 million. In the city of Portland, we have the same problems. The scale might be bigger, but the problems are the same. Moving our assets, our transportation assets, our 4,000 miles of streets and roads, our 157 bridges, none of which crossed the Willamette River. If you add in the bridges that cross the Willamette River that are by historical happenstance maintained by the county, you can double the $326 million maintenance backlog for the city. The economic cost, as has been mentioned to the city, is $844 million in the year 2025, but it's about a half a billion dollars last year. And when you put a value to an injury and to human life, a gruesome task, but done by the National Transportation Safety Board, the negative cost to the Portland economy, just the Portland economy, is $440 million per year. So the Portland Office of Transportation, because of the increasing costs of providing basic services and because of the flat revenue that we are allocated from the state, has been cutting its budget for the past 6 years. The problem that we started out with gets worse every single day. And just to be very clear, Portland has a reputation throughout the state that can be interpreted very differently by very different parts of the state. I grew up in Newport, Oregon, and Eugene, Oregon, and was a resident of Salem, and have been a resident of Portland for the past 15 years. And we are very proud of investing in alternative forms of transportation. But when you break the money down from the capital improvement projects of where we spend our money, 56% goes to motor vehicles. 40% of that goes to freight projects. Why? Because we are the third most trade-dependent region in the United States. And congestion for us is not just an inconvenience, it's not just a killer, but it also is a job depleter. 26% goes to transit and making safe ways to and from transit. 16% goes to pedestrian improvements in terms of our capital project. And 1.5% goes to bikes. So you have many difficult tasks before you. As someone who runs a transportation department, I'm very sympathetic. In terms of all the problems that the city faces, it has long been the tradition in terms of maintaining transportations across this country that the user pays. And right now the user is not paying for the services that they are asking for. I appreciate your consideration and I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Sam. Questions? Nope. Thanks. Let's see. Beverly Bookman.
Good afternoon, Chair Gilman and members of the committee. I am Beverly Book, and I'm representing the Commercial Real Estate Economic Coalition, CREEC, and also the National Association of Industrial and Office Properties, NAOP. I waive my testimony today in favor of the interesting and important information provided to you by previous speakers. We are part of this broad coalition of economic interests who are lobbying the legislature for increased transportation funding. because we do fall back farther and farther behind, as you've seen from Commissioner Adams' excellent testimony, and we urge you to pass these two bills forward for consideration at the Revenue Committee. Even though they are modest, they are an important part of improving our transportation funding infrastructure now and in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bookman. Any questions? All right. Thank you. Matt Garrett.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Very quickly, you heard from Commissioner Adams of the great need on the city side. The counties can articulate the same thing, the state can articulate the same thing, and that was captured in the Oregon Transportation Plan. Simply put, the needs far outstrip the revenues, and certainly ODOT, both on 2653 and 3018, appreciates any effort that provides critical funding to make sure that our transportation infrastructure is healthy, and in turn, our state economy is healthy as well. Madam Chair, that concludes my remark.
Thank you, Mr. Garrett. Any questions for Mr. Garrett? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to call up several at one time. We've got three chairs here, Bob Russell, Veronica Renard, I believe, and, just those two for now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Veronica Reinert. I'm the Director of Community Relations for the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association. And no, I'm not a tenor. I have a cold. In the interest of time, I will also waive my planned testimony. I'll make it available in writing. I would just like to go on record for the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association and the tourism industry in support of moving these bills to revenue. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I, too, am going to try to be brief. First, I'd like to thank Commissioner Pape, Commissioner Adams, Steve Clark, Director Garrett, and others sitting behind me representing the business community. I'm so pleased that they are here today, and I'm so pleased that you're hearing their voice. It's wonderful to be having this conversation about transportation, which has sort of been my life, and it's wonderful to have the support of the business community, which I actually am part of the business community, and I have been working with them for some time and want to continue working with them into the future. However, we have a little bit of a different view at this point in time. We share their sense of urgency. When we look at freight transportation, the forecast is that freight is supposed to double between now and 2025. When you travel our highways and freeways today and you look at the number of trucks, right now we're transporting 72% of the freight in this state. By 2025, we're supposed to be transporting 76%, and that's double from what we're doing today. That's just huge when you look at the congestion that we're already facing in the major metropolitan areas and in other areas in the state. When you think of twice as many trucks, more than twice as many trucks in that period of time, how are we going to deal with that? That is the number one concern to my industry, not only in Oregon, but nationwide. One of the ways we think we need to deal with it is we think we need to deal with it in a multimodal way. Particularly on the freight side, it's going to take all of the modes working together to get the job done. It's going to take trucks, it's going to take rail, it's going to take water, pipeline, and air in order to keep Oregon's economy moving into the future. We see some challenges. In some ways, we see a lack of inertia. When it comes to highway projects in particular, there are some communities that have looked at highway projects and actually made the decision not to build them. Building roads today can be a very difficult thing. There are a lot of competing interests and all want to be heard, and not always is the decision made to go forward. I can think of one that was fairly recent in the Eugene area. There was one not too long ago in the Seaside area. where the decision was actually made not to go forward with the project. We also have in our state in transportation, not unlike other issues, but we have a significant urban-rural conflict. The needs in Portland are great. The projects are expensive. But we also have needs out in the rural area. And the urban folks don't always think the rural folks are hearing them and vice versa. And that's a conversation that I think we need to continue to make sure both our urban and rural folks understand that they are being their needs are being addressed by our transportation system. I think we also have an issue of trust, confidence in government, and by no means am I being critical of the Department of Transportation here. I'm saying, generally speaking, the citizens are having some difficulty with confidence in their government. And in this particular area, because the time is so critical, we don't think we can do business as usual. We think that we need to have a plan, a solid plan of how we're going to go forward that includes the projects that we actually intend to build. Now, there are a number of things that are underway in order to get us to that plan, but we don't think that we can be successful in this effort with the magnitude of funding and the construction that we're talking about if we don't have a plan of how to get to the future. We've been working on freight master plans in the city of Portland, which we've completed. We've got one that we're working on in the metro region. ODOT is also undertaking a freight master plan. That's a piece of the puzzle. That is not the total puzzle because, as you folks know, we don't just have to move freight. We also have to move people. There is another approach that's being discussed in this building. And I'd like to turn our attention now to House Bill 3018 and the Dash 6 amendments. The Dash 6 amendments would raise the plate fee by $20 for a single plate, by $40 for a pair of plates, and it would also increase the weight mile tax to maintain cost responsibility. With that money, we would bond for 10 years, raise $200 million, and we would do some construction, some congestion reduction projects throughout the state. There's a distribution formula similar with what we used in Connect Oregon 2. And this is the tax and sort of construction piece. And it's intended to keep the conversation going, keep the visibility going, demonstrate that we can address the real congestion problems, all of those kinds of things. It's a piece and a small piece. Last week, the Senate Business and Transportation Committee passed Senate Bill 566, which has a number of the other pieces in it. That bill sets up a joint interim transportation committee with 5 representatives and 5 senators. And it also requires a number of studies that would be reported to this Joint Interim Transportation Committee. One of the studies would be how ODOT deals with their real estate. And is there a more efficient way that we can do that and increase the yield to the highway fund? Another one of the studies, and far more important, is looking at how we fund our transportation systems on the local level. We've heard lots of testimony today about some of the challenges of funding our streets and roads at the local level. What this study proposes is that we take a different look at it. And it talks about utility transportation utility districts as one thing to consider. And also, it doesn't have any boundaries. But I've heard Representative Butler talk several times about the rural transportation districts that are so popular out in his area. And it seems like one of the things that that study sort of aimed at is going back to a way like we used to fund our schools, where we did it with local property taxes, and local folks got to vote, and they got to go to the school board meeting, and people were pretty happy. Since we now have school funding at the state level, you folks know all too well, it's much more difficult to make people happy. So that's one of the studies that's part of Senate Bill 566. Another major plank in that piece of legislation is a study to look at congestion throughout the state and develop a list of projects that would be reported to that committee in July of 2008 in preparation for a major transportation funding proposal in 2009. We're very supportive of the Construction Reduction Act of 2007 that's been developed by Senator Metzger and Senator Starr. Those are the major components because of the time in the session and the way things were proceeding, they had to be done in different bills. We could start the non-tax stuff on the Senate side, but the tax stuff had to start over here, so you're just seeing a little piece. You'll get the other piece, but and you're not seeing the total package. So the Oregon Trucking Associations would very strongly support Dash 6 amendments to 3018 and would hope that you would put them in the bill today. It does; they do replace the entire bill. And then my understanding is that that would move down to revenue so we could get that in position to get it passed and get that stuff going. You'll see Senate Bill 566 in this committee, I hope, very soon. And we're also, saying to you, be careful, be cautious. It's going to take a different approach to be successful. I don't know if you saw the Oregonian on Sunday, but they have this little section of statistics. And this Sunday, it was they said people how many people opposed or were in favor of various taxes. And one of the taxes they mentioned was the fuel tax. And it said that 82% of the folks opposed an increase in fuel tax. Well, with the price of fuel today, you can understand the last time we had a fuel tax on the ballot, you may recall that it went down 88% to 12. I was involved in that effort, not on the right side. My organization very, very much wants to be successful. We want to lay the groundwork. We want to continue to work with the folks sitting here behind me. And we want to come back in 09 and do something that works and that would help my industry keep the economy and the state of Oregon moving into the future. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I've taken far longer than I intended. But
thank you, Bob. Questions?
I had a question, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Bob.
Thank you. So, Bob, if I understand your testimony, the doubling of the single plate fees and the doubling of the registration fees that are proposed in the Dash 6 amendment as presented to us by Senator Metzger on 3018 would be to fund, or would basically be to debt service the $200 million in bonding.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that's absolutely correct.
And the $200 million bonding is for?
It would be for congestion relief projects, and there's a bunch of criteria. It would be $10 million or less per project. They would be distributed, much like Connect Oregon, with 10% in each of the 5-0-dot regions, essentially the 5-0-dot regions, although they don't quite line up with the counties. There would be 10% set aside for acquisition of right-of-way for projects of statewide significance. So there's a number of criteria in order to do to select the projects. But yes.
Further questions? Thank you, Bob. Jonathan Schulter and Burton Weiss.
Thank you, Chair Gilman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Schulter. I'm Executive Director of Westside Economic Alliance. We are a business advocacy group that represents the employers, the land developers, the property managers, and the communities on the west side of the Portland metro region. I'm also a constituent of Representative Reed in South Beaverton. In the interest of your time this evening, what I'd like to offer here is a joint letter of support from four allied business organizations sweeping across the Portland metro region, including the Clackamas County Business Alliance, the Columbia Corridor Association, and the East Metro Economic Alliance. These groups represent the same types of companies and public agencies that we represent on the west side. Mr. Wiest has been called away for a competing obligation, so he will not be testifying here this evening. I'd like to testify on their behalf. What we share in common among all these four groups is that traffic congestion is costing us money. Businesses are losing money because we can't get our products to market or to their distribution warehouse systems or to their customers and our suppliers to us. Commuters cannot get to the workplace in the morning, and we cannot tax what we do not earn, so we are losing productivity. Residents of our communities cannot get to the places that we value, our museums, our schools, our historic places, our restaurants, our cultural places. We are losing the livability of our community. So the thing that we share together is that the cost of congestion affects us all. We are trying to offer a program here, and by moving these two bills forward today, what you would accomplish is that we would increase freight capacity, we would improve commuter access, we would increase road capacity, we would restore system reliability, and we'd improve public safety. Those are the objectives. Work out the formula in further committee discussions later this session. Thank you for your attention and consideration.
Thank you very much. Questions? Oh, good. Jenna Ingram, I think she left.
Mr. Chairman, she asked me to send her apologies as well. She was called away for a competing hearing just moments ago.
I understand. Thank you. Susie Pape.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. As a citizen and as a person who is driving to run the errands of the family, I hope that you move this bill forward so that we can have some relief from the congestion that we all suffer. Thank you.
Thank you. Dwight Harden. No, Dwight. Okay. Jay Walden.
I guess by now it's good evening.
I think it's beginning to be.
Vice Chair Gilman and members of the committee, I'm Jay Waldron. I'm president of the Port of Portland Commission. For the last 6 years, I've had firsthand experience in seeing how this state competes with others for business, trade, and jobs. And as you know, if we want to compete in the global marketplace, the speed and reliability of your transportation system is one of the determining factors. We're a trade-dependent economy. One of five jobs in this state is dependent on trade. And we're an income tax-dependent economy. And job creation is probably the most valuable thing you or I or any of us can do to assist with transportation and education. I very much appreciate the time you've spent with these bills. I thank you for your hard work and for having the vision to move these bills forward, as I hope you do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? No. Art Schlack.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Art Schlack with the Association of Oregon Counties. In the last few weeks, I've had several opportunities to speak to you about the county's interest in increasing revenue for transportation. In fact, you were kind enough to hear a couple of bills that the counties were interested in earlier this afternoon at this point. In recognition of the county's understanding and desire for increase in transportation revenue, earlier this year, the Association of Oregon Counties took a position to support an increase in the gas tax, an increase in registration, first-time title, and also indexing as opportunities to increase transportation revenue within this state as a whole. The two bills that you have before you today deal with two of those issues or two of those opportunities, registration and a gas tax increase. We support continuing the dialogue and discussion with respect to a transportation package for this session. We support a multi-session discussion because I think the only way we're really going to deal with transportation is to develop a multi-session strategy for looking at transportation not every 10 or 15 years, but at least every 2 years if we're on a two-year cycle for the legislature. The other thing I would like to just add is we have had conversations with Senator Metzger dealing with the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 3018. We are supportive of those if the committee is looking at that as a something that you want to do now, or if you want to send both of those bills down to revenue with the Dash 6 amendments for further consideration, we are supportive of that. But we are very pleased to see this committee and the legislature, both in the House and the Senate, beginning to have the discussion about transportation funding on a statewide basis, and also that you recognize that there are times when we need to look at local situations also. With that, Mr. Chair, that could complete my comments for today.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you.
We have about four more speakers.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sure they'll be short. Do you want to move this thing?
Mr. Chair, I am prepared to vote yes now, but after four more speakers, I don't know that I'm prepared to vote yes. I'm proposed to move this. I'm prepared to move this bill now.
To those speakers that are left, you will be able to turn in your testimony. I'm going to go ahead and move these two bills. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Let's do 3018 first.
Work session.
Close the public hearing.
Oh, yeah.
And then open the work session.
Close the public hearing and open a work session on 3018.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 3018.
Representative Tomei moves the Dash 6 amendments to 3018. Discussion. Objection.
Yeah.
So move.
Yep. Wait. We have an objection.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Smith.
I object.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3018 as amended to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves the 3018 as amended to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Byer.
Aye, I guess.
I guess.
Motion carries.
Have we have one minute. Okay. We still have to do 2653.
Okay.
Close the work session on 3018.
Oh, close the work session on House Bill 3018. Open a work session on House Bill 2653. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2653 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, go ahead,
Representative. Please go,
Representative. My concern, and thank you, Representative May, for making the motion. My concern about a motion with a due pass, given that this is a significant, the fuel increase, highly political in nature, I'd be much more comfortable saying this without recommendation to revenue.
I would amend my motion. Thank you. Motion's amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'll be casting a no vote on House Bill 2653. There's no doubt in my mind that there's a definite need for additional transportation dollars within the state, but I think right now the timing couldn't be any worse, in that fuel prices are $3.36, $3.39. a gallon, and there's projections that they're going to go up to $4. And I just think that hardworking Oregonians at this point in time can't afford any additional taxes placed upon them.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Representative.
Madam Chair, this is going without recommendation. Again, I have confidence that the folks in revenue, with all of the other revenue issues that they're faced with, are going to have to make some very difficult decisions. And I have all the confidence in the world in Representative Reed making the right decisions.
I appreciate it.
I'll be following Representative.
Thank you. Okay, those of the opinion, House Bill 2653. I'm down to the next bill already, guys. See, I'm ready to get you out of here. 2653 should be reported to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Byer.
Aye. Motion passes. And I close the work session on House Bill 2653. Thank everybody for coming. Sorry I missed it.
You would have enjoyed it.
I would have much rather been with you. I'm going to open a work session on HJM 11. And
thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Joint Memorial 11, we have the dash two amendments before us that modifies the memorial language to read that the Congress of the United States is respectfully urged to provide appropriations to cover the cost of implementing the Real ID Act in Oregon and other states, asking them to provide an easily accessible, low-cost system that allows all Oregonians, regardless of place of birth, to obtain the documents necessary for a driver's license, driver's permit, or identification card that conforms to the Real ID Act, to extend the deadline for implementation of the Real ID Act until states have sufficient time after the federal government approves the rules to determine which state laws, administrative rules, and practices are necessary for implementation. It urges Congress to extend the deadline for implementation until privacy protections and safeguards are implemented to ensure that copies of all identification documents, such as birth certificates and Social Security cards and personal information including name, date of birth, gender, driver's license number or permit number, digital photograph, address, signature, and personal data, submitted, copied, or retained by the department are sufficiently protected against unauthorized or illegal access and use. It urges Congress to extend the U.S. Department of Homeland Security deadline for accepting those permits and licenses that are not in compliance and allow states to have sufficient time to come into compliance. It urges Congress to take into account the burden on Oregonians to obtain the necessary documents required to obtain a Real ID Act compliant license or permit. And finally, it would urge Congress to consider driver's licenses, driver's permits, and identification cards compliant with the Real ID Act when states have come into substantial compliance with the law. We have, of course, this is a memorial, no revenue, and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judah.
Is there a, Madam Chair, a staff manager summary on the amendments as well?
No, there's
okay.
Not.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judith, I'm trying to understand on page 3, line 20 through 22. Providing easily accessible process can allow all Oregonians regardless of place of birth. What does it mean by regardless of place of birth?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that particular language, on page 3, start line 20 through 22, now that is replaced by substantially the same language in the dash two amendments. but it still does include regardless of place of birth. And I would have to defer to legislative counsel on that. They're not in the room right now, but...
Can I help clarify? The entire provision, if you go all the way down, at least on the amendment, lines 15 to 17, or 18, it does talk about conforming to the Real ID Act, and that would limit to regardless of place of birth being people born in the United States, as my understanding of the Real ID Act.
Thank you.
Or citizenship of the United States.
Any other questions? I am, if I'm just making sure everybody had a chance to look it over.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Trenton 111.
Representative Reed moves the dash two amendments dated 4/25/07 to HJM 11. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm still anxious about the delay, but I also recognize that that this is a national as well as an international crisis, and that Oregon finds itself not unlike any of the other 49 states trying to get its arms around the Real ID Act. I really, the memorial, if I had an opportunity to write the memorial myself, you made me king for a day, it would be that the federal government would reach in its pocket and start funding the Real ID Act by apportioning money out to the states, and that should be the effect of the memorial as opposed to saying, just give us more time. It really needs to say, just give us the money to do it right and do it right now.
Give us the money. Okay. It has been moved. Any objections?
Madam Chair, I'm going to vote no on that.
All right. So noted. And Representative Butler? Motion carries. And?
Madam Chair, I have a question. On line 18 of the original bill, it does say, provide appropriations to cover the cost of implementing the Real ID Act. So in the amendments, does it also?
Yeah.
It
13.
Does.
Yeah. On line 13.
So, okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Motion?
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 11 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gilman moves House Joint Memorial 11 as amended to the floor with a to be adopted recommendation. That's all right. Any discussion? All right. See? It's getting late. Nobody wants to talk anymore, I think.
I don't even know what issue we're on.
Yeah. Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
No.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Would you call it? It's the Hester and Memorial.
I'm a no. I had to refer to my partner here.
Chair Byer.
Aye. The motion carries.
Exactly.
It's money for moral canons.
And I may say, Madam Chair, that it does ask for money, but it also delays the implementation of the time. And I just fear that message is a mixed message. Thank you.
I'm going to close the... Oh, we do need a carrier. So...
Well, shoot, yes. I mean, it's...
You want to do it?
I'll do it. Oh, we can both do it.
We can sign us up together. I don't know if we got that much to talk about.
I'll just do it.
Okay. Representative Gilman. I'm going to close the work session.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2526. And Judith. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2526 directs the Department of Transportation to immediately notify a person if a physician, health care provider, or superintendent of a hospital for the mentally ill or mentally retarded informs the department that a person should not drive because of a physical or mental impairment. We have a letter from the speaker, I'll just point out, approving this bill to be moved to the Rules Committee should the committee so desire.
Madam, we're in the public hearing.
Yes. and no one has signed up, and but since it was the first time it was heard, I put it on for that. So I'm going to go ahead and close, unless people have questions, but since we're not going to, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2526.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2526 to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2526 to the Committee on Rules without recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. Okay, and now we're getting there, guys. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2821. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2821 before us today has a Dash 1 amendment that does replace the original bill. It would authorize a combination of three implements of husbandry or two implements of husbandry hauled or towed. So you'll notice in the bill we're deleting the word drawn and we're allowing them to haul or tow by another vehicle to be operated on a highway without violation of limits. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I don't have a sign-up sheet, but Don Schellenberg, would you like to come up with your...
Good evening, Madam Chair. Don Schellenberg representing Oregon Farm Bureau. With me is Carl Jensen today from the Silverton area, agriculture producer. We'll try to keep this brief, and I'd have to apologize to Representative Buckley, I'm sorry. The only right combination. The only one of you that I didn't get an opportunity to contact prior to this bill. This bill came to our attention just a couple of weeks ago, and the description given by the committee administrator is exactly accurate. What this bill does is provide a more safe way of moving these agricultural equipment pieces from field to field. So, you know, with that, unless you have questions, we'll move along here. And if you do have questions, we'd sure be happy to answer them. You have before you a picture, actually two pictures, of the combination that's being used. The brighter picture, I guess you'd say, shows the dolly underneath the grain drill. That makes it much safer to move than moving the grain drill on the ground itself. So thank you, Madam Chair. And again, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, but for the fact that they've made it a little safer, this bill just allows us to do the same things that we have been doing in the past, except that just moving one of the pieces of equipment that's being dragged along to a dolly, in effect, to make it safer than bouncing down the road.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public.
Madam Chair, before you close, could you ask ODOT to come up?
Oh, I forgot. ODOT is signed up, and I was ready to just move on, Jack.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll be really brief. ODOT is in full support of this. We took a look at this and thought that perhaps it was a an error when the original statute was constructed, the way it was written, but this is appears to be a safer way of...
Let's identify yourself.
I'm sorry, Jack Evans of the Department of Transportation. And so we're in agreement with this. This is appears to be a safer mode of transport in many cases, and we have absolutely no problems with it.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. And now I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2821 and open a work session on House Bill 2821.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2821.
Representative Tomei has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2821 dated 4/26 of 07. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objections?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2821 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2821 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
Aye. Motion carries.
Madam Chair, is this a consent calendar item?
Yes.
Please.
And the only, I mean, I think this would be a good consent calendar item, but the actual, if people look at the actual bill summary where it says, a pickup pulling a fifth wheel, might have a few concerns.
We have a picture attached, and we'll make sure that we get it out under Representative Smith's stamp to get it on the floor. Co-signed with Representative Reed.
There you go.
Of course.
So maybe I'll volunteer to carry the bill.
All right. We're right behind you all the way, Madam Chair.
Oh, good, good. The work session on House Bill 2821 is closed, and I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2851.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2851 is the measure that creates a task force on transportation needs for persons with developmental disabilities. It would declare an emergency effective upon passage. You do have before you the Dash 1 amendments. They modify the task force membership. It adds to the task force duties the identification and review of transportation needs and opportunities in the context of community living needs of persons with disabilities and in the context of integrated public transit services. It extends the time for reporting findings and recommendations to the appropriate legislative committee, extends that to October 30th, 2008, and finally directs that the Department of Human Services as well as the Department of Transportation shall staff that task force. We do finally have the fiscal impact on the Dash 1 amendments. That is showing a $53,500 impact in the 07-09 biennium and part of one employee. That would include both that employee's costs and the remaining impact as a result of the fact that the bill allows for reimbursement for actual and necessary travel for those task force members. And you'll see on the second page, there is a second page to that fiscal in which, on the back, I didn't want anyone to miss the back statements there, and at least legislative fiscal believes that this warrants a review by the Ways and Means Committee. That's up for your consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, this does require staff limitation because it does require some discussion as to hiring staff and so forth. It really needs to go to the Ways and Means. So can we move it to Ways and Means by our own motion at that point?
Actually, it has a referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, all right.
Now, so.
Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2851.
4607.
Yeah. Representative Butler moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2821, dated 4607. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objection? No.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2851 as amended with the dash one amendments be moved to the Ways and Means to the House. Ways and Means, the House floor through the Ways and Means, do pass recommendation.
Representative Butler moves the House Bill 2821 as amended to the 2851 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Butler.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Byer.
Aye. Motion carries. And hopefully I'm not going to do the same thing my last committee chair did and adjourn with one bill sitting on the table, so our agenda is finished, right?
Oh, my gosh, really?
Madam Chair, so bad for her.
We are adjourned, and thank you very much for sticking with me.